House will come to order. With that order, business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 235, concurrence failed. Mr. Speaker, Senate file number 41, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, failed to concur on House amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Noes 30, ayes 0. The Senate requests the House to appoint a conference committee number 01 to meet with the like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Sincerely, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 236. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee number 01 from the House on the amendments to Senate File 41. The Senate conferees are Senator Hines, Chairman, Senator Anderson, and Senator Rothfuss. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 237. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 13, UCC liens electronic filing, ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 238, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 14, Business Entities and Revisions. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form of ayes 30, noes 0. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 239, concurrence requested on House Bill number 15, Business Entities, Enforcement and Penalties. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form with 29 ayes, 1 no. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Number 240. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 18, Coroner's Standards Dash Enforcement, ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 241. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 19, Notary Fees, ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 242. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 36, Constituent Service Allowance, ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 243, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 37, Revisers Bill. The House bill listed above passed on third reading pursuant to SR 12-11. The Senate voted to rescind the third reading action, and the bill has been laid back without prejudice. Ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Concurrence requested, Mr. Speaker. House Bill number 38, Taxidermy Licenses. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form by these votes. I 24, no 6. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 47, Government Royalty Revenues Dash Definition. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 246. The bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 53, Wyoming Lottery Definition. Ayes 23, noes 7. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 247, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 69, Fuel Tax Natural Gas, ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 248, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 86, Rural Health Care Districts Authority, ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 249, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 95, Diabetes Care Planning. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 24, noes 6. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 250. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 123, Unified Administrative Code and Database, ayes 30, noes 0, Dinah Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 251, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 5, Education-Required School Bus Video Equipment-2, ayes 19, noes 11, Dinah Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 252, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 22, Mineral Tax Audit Interest Rate. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows. Ayes 21, noes 9. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Dinah Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 253, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 62, General Procedures for Licensure Boards. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows. Ayes 30, noes 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Dinah Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 254. The bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 145, Streamline Sales Tax Amendment, ayes 28, noes 2. Dinah Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 255. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 175, Transfer on Death Deed, ayes 30, noes 0. Dinah Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
With that order of business, request to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill. The first message for our consideration is message number 238 on House Bill 14. Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move for concurrence on House Bill 14 and ask you to vote aye. Ladies and gentlemen, if you remember on House Bill 14, it does seem like a long time ago, it was in regards to business entities, which was an interim project that we did with the Corporations Committee. And it has to do with limited liability partnerships. And in one of the processes on page 5, it's with the continuance. We had changed the language during the interim to the application shall be executed by any person. And what the Senate has done is they've gone back to the original language in statute, which said executed by the manager or managers, if any, or by any member who is authorized to execute the application on behalf of the organization. So it's just semantics, really. So I just ask you to vote aye.
Any discussion? We're voting on a motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 14. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Lickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Gay,
Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Green, Halverson, Harshman, Harvey, Harvey, Hunt, Hutchings, Yagi, Kasparic, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson, Lockhart, Laux, Madden, Mader, McKim, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Petroff, Piperinen, Reeder, Simlick, Summers, Stubson, Teeters, Throne, Walters, Watt, Wilson, Winters, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, Throne.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 no.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 14. The next message for our consideration is message number 239 on House Bill 15. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move for concurrence on House Bill 15 and ask for your favorable aye. And ladies and gentlemen, again, this is dealing with business entities, and it's dealing with, on page 2, section C, the fees and amounts and collections. And basically what happened down the hall was, again, just language change. They are completely deleting that paragraph and putting in new language. It's the same intent, just in a different style. And so I'd ask for a favorable aye.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just one point here. I notice in Romanet I, when you're inserting that, there's a misprint, and I don't know if the LSO can straighten that out or not, but it says required to paid is paid, but I think there's a B missing. Required to be paid is paid. And I don't know how the best way to fix that is, but I know we don't want to go through another concurrence.
Mr. Speaker, I see that also.
Just a minute. Chairman Berger, could you repeat the wrong reference?
Mr. Speaker, so it's on page 2, lines 6 through 12, that we're being replaced by language developed by the Senate. And it's on Romanet I. It says the correct filing fee, any franchise tax, license fee, penalty or past due fees, taxes or penalties, and how they have it is required to paid is paid. And I believe it should be required to be paid is paid. So I think we'd move for a technical correction.
I also stand at ease until the sound of the gavel. We can either we can concur and fix it in the revisor's bill, or we can not concur and go fix it, which is probably the recommended solution.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask the body not to concur.
We are voting. Is there any further discussion? Representative Greer. Mr. Speaker, I too would just recommend that we don't concur. Not only do we have the mistake in this, but it takes what was a very well-worded bill that came out of this body and makes it awkward and difficult to read. So, I mean, I just don't think it does anything positive for us. We should not concur, get it back to what we had it, so we can understand the law. We're voting on a motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill number 15. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker. No. Barlow. No. Berger. No. Blake. No. Levins. No. Lickry. No. Brown. No. Burkhart. No. Bird. No. Campbell. No. Kennedy. No. Coleman. No. Connolly. No. Davison. No. Davison. No. Eklund. No. Esquivel. Filer, no. Freeman, no. Gay, no. Gingery, no. Goggles, no. Greer, no. Green, no. Halverson, no. Harshman, no. Harvey, no. Hunt, no. Hutchings, no. Yagi, no. Kasparic, no. Kirkbride, no. Croker, no. Crone, no. Larson, no. Lockhart, no. Laux, no. Madden, no. Mader, no. McKim, no. Miller, no. Moniz, Nicholas, no. Northrup, no. Patton, no. Paxton, no. Petroff, no. Pieperinen, no. Reeder, no. Semlick, no. Summers, no. Stubson, no. Teeters, no. Throne, no. Walters, no. Watt, no. Wilson, no. Winters, no. Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 1 aye, 59 no.
By your vote, you have voted not to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 15. Conference committee for that bill will be Berger Chairman, Madden, and Goggles. The next bill for our the next message for our consideration is message 244 on House Bill 38. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is the taxidermy licensure bill, and the Senate actually made some changes that were pretty innocuous as far as the sponsor was concerned. One of them inserted a 48-hour notification, and the other one talked about no big or trophy game animal or any part thereof shall be shipped or transported from the state unless accompanied by the license. So it didn't hurt the bill. It may have enhanced it. So I would just encourage you to vote aye on concurrence.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Speaker, and this is really just for the presenter of the amendment here. 48 hours, unless it's clearly spelled out. I'm not sure if that's business hours. It's not. I don't find it anywhere else in the bill. And so I just wanted to make sure that this is something that can be practically enforced for 48 hours.
Anyone else for your first time? First time. Second time. Chairman Harvey.
I guess when I read it, I just thought 48 hours means 2 days, 48 hours. And so if the body thinks that we need to go back and define 48 hours, I think it's fine the way it is, and my country lawyer friend agrees.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 38. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Levins.
Aye.
Lickry.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison. Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman. Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
Mater.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Watt.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 no.
By your vote, you voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 38. The next message for our consideration is message number 245 on House Bill 47. Chairman Harvey, or Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move for concurrence on House Bill 47 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, what this does is it changed the effective date from July 1, 2014 to immediately upon completion of all acts necessary for the bill to become law. And I'd ask for a favorable aye.
Is there any further discussion? We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments on House Bill 47. A majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker. Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel. Filer. Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Hunt,
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
Mater,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 no.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 47. The next message for our consideration is message 249 on House Bill 95. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message number 249, being the original House Bill 95, diabetes care planning. The Senate just inserted a deadline for a report. So after they have their benchmarks figured out, then we want to hear from them October 1st of this year. And I think that's a great idea. I would urge your aye vote.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments on House Bill 95. A majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey. Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
Mater,
aye.
McKim,
no.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
Aye.
Reeder.
No.
Semlick.
No.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Cheaters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Laux. Aye to no. Hunt. Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 46 aye, 14 no.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 95. Madam Speaker Pro Tem, are you around? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, or Madam Speaker Pro Tem, could you come up to the table? Or whatever this thing is. We're at the next message for our consideration is message number 252 on House Bill 22. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that concurrence with regard to message number 252 on House Bill 22 and ask you to please vote aye. Folks, I meekly admit that the correction that was made here was to back out an amendment I made on third reading in here that we thought was going to be right, but it turned out to be wrong and conflict with the law. So now the bill is good since my amendment doesn't appear there anymore, and I urge you to vote aye.
All right. We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate Amendment to House Bill 22. A majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Filer, aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
Mader,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller, Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 no.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with the Senate amendment to House Bill 22. The next message for our consideration is message number 253 to House Bill 62. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. I move message number 253 and ask for your favorable consideration. And I will turn the explanation of this major amendment over to the good representative from Fremont County.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. You know, we shouldn't be so mean to the other side over there because they did catch something here because the speaker did sign our House Bill 25, which was on the Funeral Service Practitioners Act, and they caught some sections of the bill we had earlier, the general procedures for licensure boards. And this concerns, their catch concerns the State Board of Embalming, which that's what the Funeral Service Practitioners Act covers. So it goes in and corrects some sections on some compensation of secretary, per diem for members. That's all covered in the bill. So, you know, we don't need this in this House Bill 62 any longer. So it's just removing those sections that were conflicting in the bill. So I ask for your favorable consideration.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments on House Bill 62. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Gay,
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
no.
Harshman, Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
Mader,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any? Halverson? No to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 60 aye.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 62. Conference Committee for Senate File 41 will be Greer, Chairman, Miller, and Patton. We're now at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Representative Kirkbride.
Good afternoon. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 91. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 91 from Senator Rothfuss, an act relating to the administration of government and privacy, creating a task force, providing for a study of privacy rights in relation to digital information technology, providing privacy-related principles for the task force study, requiring a report, providing appropriations, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 91 engrossed, Digital Information Privacy Task Force, reports back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman, and further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 91 engrossed, as they report back to the House with a recommendation that a do pass failed pursuant to House Rule 4-8. Those who voted aye, Representative Esquivel, Harshman, and Stubson. Those who voted no, Representatives Blickery, Burkhart, Moniz, and Nicholas, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Madam Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 91 do pass, and I defer to the good representative Byrd to give the explanation.
Mr. Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be brief today. We went over this pretty much in length the other day. Just a reminder, this is a bill to create a digital information privacy task force. And I think the explanation was pretty good the other day, withstanding the input from the Appropriations Committee. I would stand for questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? No amendment. Question being called. All those in favor of Speaker Pro Tem Berger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 91 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 91 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Just a point of order. There's a question about the amendment. Okay. Excuse me. The explanation is we dealt with this bill on Friday and that standing committee amendment was dealt with at that time. So we picked that up this afternoon in mid-bill. So we're okay. Division. Division is called for. All those in favor, please stand. This is on the bill. The amendment was dealt with on Friday. Those opposed, please stand. Okay. We're good. Senate File 91 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 11. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 11 from the Management Council, an act relating to appropriations for the legislature, providing appropriations for the operation of the legislative branch of state government and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 11, engrossed appropriation for the legislature, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. There were 7 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 11 do pass. Mr. Chairman, I would go ahead and explain the bill. There is not a standing committee amendment, I believe. Is there? I don't have that in my folder. See that?
Yes, there is.
There's 3 Committee of the Whole amendments. Oh, yes. Now I have it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, I also move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1. I would like to explain the Standing Committee Amendment. It's rather straightforward. And then we can vote on that and move on to the bill, if that'd be okay, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Okay, members, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 And I think most of you have it. Everybody had it except the person explaining the bill. It goes to line three. We're going to replace legislative laptops. And it says, in selecting replacement laptop computers for the legislative 2015-16 fiscal biennium, the Select Committee on Legislative Technology and Process shall provide at least one alternative operating system for use by a pilot test group of legislators. And so it's been a really thing we've been working towards. This is probably a little more of a push. We were always told that nothing could work in this environment except the PC environment until the director of ETS came to explain his budget with a certain tablet that begins with a piece of fruit. And so the chief technology guy in the state brings his fruit tablet, and we're all told in this body that fruit doesn't work here. Well, I have a fruit laptop. I know other legislators do that we've logged into, and we're printing on the computers or printing on the printers and doing all that. And so we think choice is a good thing. And so this would, instead of just mandating that they pull all of us, maybe of a select test group of us, we basically did that with committee number two, where we moved to a online environment with these fruit tablets, totally changed the way we do business and appropriations. And so we think choice is good. And so that's really what this amendment is about. I'd stand for any questions. Thank you.
Chairman Deanery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly like using my fruit tablet. How do I get to be one of these pilot test groupers? Is this just joint appropriations, I'm guessing?
Chairman Hirschman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, no, it is not tied to a committee. In fact, this barely survived committee voice vote. And so I'm assuming that since there's only one fruit on appropriations right now, I know you're all saying I like the way you think, but I would think that members of this body could just simply say, I would like to be part of that, alternative operating system for the pilot test. And I think there's probably less than a half a dozen of us fruit lovers. Okay, maybe six or seven. So I think you'd simply ask, Mr. Chairman. That's my answer.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move to divide the standing committee amendment. So I would suggest that we divide lines 1 through 11 is division 1, and then 12 through 14 is division 2.
The chair has ruled that the division is admissible. We're on division 1.
The chair is wise. If I may, I stand before you holding fruit, and I use fruit. However, we have to look at the difficulties this brings to our staff and some of the initiatives that are coming out of the committee associated with technology. We're working hard to try to cut down the volume of paper that we have. And we're working on and have spent a tremendous amount of money on a program called SharePoint, which is a Microsoft. Yes, I shouldn't say that, but okay, I can say that. She said I can. Anyway, platform system, which is a Microsoft platform. And really it's something we need to stay the course on with this. We're quite a ways along in that project. The fact of the matter is we don't have the staff that has the technical abilities to work with the fruit, which doesn't require a lot of technical corrections. But no, I'd ask on behalf of the projects that we've been working on that we stay the course, resist division number one, vote against it. For the fruit lovers that use this, we can continue to do it. There may be a couple of things we can do, and I hate to go off into that, but like a cloud-based printing mechanism. I'm a little out of my element. All I'd say is I'd ask for us to defeat Division One. Rest of the amendment's fine.
Mr. Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's so entertaining to hear lawyers try to talk IT. But on and against Division Number One, keeping in mind that regardless of fruits, nuts, berries, razors, droids, whatever we decide to adopt, the IT staff has to gain expertise and be able to weave that seamlessly into what we have in downstairs. So there is a cost attached to this, and it's quite large if we keep going down this path. But I don't know, the good chairman there likes his fruit. I guess we should let him have that, but on and against the first part.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might just add that Appropriations Committee has been using fruit laptops for almost 2 years now, and it interacts with SharePoint quite well. So it comes down to a preference in which platform you choose to use, but I see no harm in at least testing some to see if it works.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's interesting that the Chairman of Appropriations would bring a high-dollar amendment on the last day of general file without a price to it, and it's a pretty high price tag is what our staff tells us, and I have to defer to our staff who has to deal with the decisions that we make here. We're currently building a custom legislative management system on a platform which is a collaboration tool that can be used to access information and implement business processes. This product is tightly integrated with other developmental technologies, and the programs are interrelated, and the software such as the program where you look through the clear place, clear stuff outside of a building, or the office programs, all of those interact, and they have little technical glitches that we don't have the expertise in our staff. This is what our staff's telling us, to make those integrate with the fruit product. And while the fruit product may be well and good and it might be easy to use, we have to understand the bind that we're putting our staff in and the amount of money that we're spending. And when our staff tells us we can't do this, we can try and make them do it. It's going to cost us a whole lot of money. Our staff tells us it's going to be a train wreck. I guess we can wreck the train if we want to. But I think at this stage, I mean, we've had a committee studying this, and we've been going down this road now for these technologies for 5 years. With one amendment on general file on the last day of a budget session without any committee understanding seems to me to be a misguided approach to this process.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Shortly after I became a legislator, I changed jobs, and one of the conditions that I had for changing jobs is that I wanted fruit. And I heard almost everything that has been said today is no, it won't work, it'll cost too much money, it's a train wreck. But one of the things that I've noticed with people who use fruit, they're very ingenious people, and they find the way to make it work. And more people are using fruit, and I think that it is going to be more expensive, but for us to be a better functioning legislator, I think that we should be able to choose the device that we know best.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the fruit.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not going to add a whole lot more to this conversation. I also love and support fruit, and I'm not going to talk about apple carts or anything else, but I think it's asinine that we sit here on this floor in a
whole flurry of paperwork. I should be able to have a device in today's day and age where my amendments pop up, follow my bills, everything tracks. Let's get with it.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against Division One, I've partaken in this fruit before, too. But after what happened yesterday, or the day before, I can't remember, with the board of this particular fruit of a company, some of the shareholders were chastised for not supporting the chairman about apple pie, baseball, about profits, that sometimes their actions in the corporate world go beyond the profit motive. And so they were pushing a green agenda for this particular fruity company. And so, you know, for a New York Stock Exchange company that has a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to make them money, I just don't think that's right. So I'm going to not support this.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. You're up. Yes, Chairman Parchman.
Okay, so we're on general file, so it's unlimited debate, and don't we all love that? Now a couple things, and I appreciate Mr. Speaker, and it's always good to give the Speaker a nice little debating challenge before he leaves, because as we know, next week, Mr. Speaker, his role will change. And so, but it's interesting how if you want to kill an amendment, that's right. And so let's, we're going to push back on the Speaker on this one. And so I would tell you that a couple of things were referenced, though. One was a question about the sharing of information. I won't say the name of the program that we can all log into. That piece of fruit's logged in right now over there to it. And so that works on any platform. And so that argument, I think, is a non-issue on that. I think as the amendment reads, and I think some folks might, and maybe this is where the Speaker is coming from, where it says at least one alternative operating system. That refers to what type of computer. That doesn't change what we're going to do with our whole technology backbone. And what the good Chairman of Education talked about, we should be able to see amendments come up. That's the goal, and we're going to take step two is later in this bill, in an appropriation in this bill, and I'll explain that when we get to the bill, hopefully. But here's the deal. When you say these are the deals that you use to try to kill things, you say it's high dollar, it's last minute, it's a train wreck, and it's misguided. Well, I don't think that's about what this is about. This is about us serving our constituents and doing this job better. That's the bottom line. And so I think choice is good. I think when we see the chief technology person in the entire state government working off fruit in our committee and our folks say it can't be done, I say let's push back on that. It's being done already on this floor, folks. And so you pilot it a little bit, a small group, and you go from there. So I hope I answered the concerns of the good representative from the county where the elk stand and sit and rest and yak, and wherever, whatever else they do in that county, those things work simultaneously. So on and for Division One.
Representative Zwanzer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm going to push back on everybody. First, to push back on the Speaker, this is a standing committee amendment on a bill. It doesn't matter that it's first reading on Committee of the Whole. It happens just like every other bill that we have a standing committee amendment on. And so that argument doesn't really play with me. However, I would ask you to resist this division and vote no, because we do have a committee that oversees these issues, legislative, technology, and process. And they've been working very hard. I served on that committee last term. They research these issues extensively. They meet with our IT staff. They meet with executive branch IT staff. These issues have been brought before them before. They've made decisions on these, and I think we should respect the will of that committee and not make a change at this point in the session that would impact the good work that's been done by that committee over the last 4 years.
Representative Freeman.
Just two things. One, just because the committee looked at it doesn't mean that it's 100% right. We've all seen that when we've come up here with our committee bills and seen them go down. And the second thing, I need clarification. Do I vote aye for fruit or nay for fruit?
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. You know, the fact is we're all issued a tool to use here. And you give that tool, and I guess you got the option to use it or not to use it. If we start giving too many choices, it becomes unmanageable for our staff that has to oversee this. Now, I know they're there to work for us. And I know it's our job to push people, and when people say, no, you can't do something, it's our job to push them and show them that they can. But at this point in time, with the money that we've got into the integrated software program that we're working on, that we're getting there to do what the good chair of education said that we ought to be doing. We're in that process, okay? We're going to be issued new computers again this year, and we just need to be able to stay and do something uniform till we can get through this step. Doesn't mean I can't use this, because I will be using this. This is convenient and handy. I agree with all those things. But right now, it's a tool that you're given to use, and we need to keep that tool uniform. And we've got two houses that we're trying to deal with, and there's varying degrees of technological intelligence. Me being on the lower end of that, I guarantee you that, okay? But that's what I'm talking about. We give too many choices, and pretty soon everybody's going to want something just a little bit different. So stay the course. Let's get through this project. You want to use your fruit? Use your fruit.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. From the Internet, from a common source of knowledge on the Internet, an operating system is a collection of software that manages computer hardware resources and provides common services for computer programs. The operating system is an essential component of the system software in a computer system. Application programs usually require an operating system to function. Now, let's not get confused here. This amendment says alternative operating systems. That's the underlying system. And right now we have an operating system that we're all familiar with. Now, that doesn't mean that certain applications can't run from that software in other computers, like Fruity computers. But those are applications. That is not the underlying operating system. And we're talking about here, if we're going to explore an alternative operating system, we're talking about going downstairs and starting with the first bolt on the bottom and rebuilding the whole deal. That's what the operating system is. Now, there's lots of different kinds of computers that can access that operating system and run it. And the Fruit computers run this stuff very well, and that's fine. I don't have any objection to that. But the question is, do you want to go down into the bowels of this thing and start rebuilding the whole thing or explore rebuilding the whole thing up with a new operating system? That means we don't use the current system that we have. That means we go and rebuild the thing on a different platform. And I don't think that's what we want. So on and against this amendment, if they want to talk about application software, if they want to talk about access with different kinds of computers, that's fine. But that's not what it says. It says it's the operating system. And that is the underlying platform that powers up the whole thing. On and against the amendment.
Mr. Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, one more time, connectivity of all this, regardless of the operating system, it all happens downstairs on the server mode. When you can't print to that color printer, it's usually because of differentials as minute as your operating system and a driver. Those people downstairs have to be brought up to speed on everything we bring through the door. There is an intrinsic cost to this, and it's very large, and it escalates geometrically with every one of those machines that we add to the network. On and against.
Madam Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment. Division 1. Ladies and gentlemen, your Legislative and Technology Committee has been meeting for 8 years, and in the last 5 years, we have been working on a new operating system, and we've been rebuilding from the ground up on the whole system. And we're not saying that you as a member cannot have your fruity choice on this floor. But when we go to distribute a laptop to you, which will be a different design because, as you know, technology changes quickly. It will have much different features, I'm sure, than what you currently have. But there's many of you on the floor right now that doesn't use what we issue to you. But as a member of the legislature, you're issued a mobile device. You can choose to use it or not to use it. The other factor is that if you do have something other than what the legislative technology group researches and gives out to the committee, we do try to adapt. There could be other ways so that you could print. Yes, I was part of that group in appropriations that had a pilot project. There are some issues with it, and that's why we're looking at alternatives, which through this session we will have some choices for you. But ladies and gentlemen, there is so much behind the scenes on what we have developed over the last 3 and 4 years. It is very tenuous in all of the design that we have done, the architecture of this whole plan. And for us to make a change now to our committee and our staff, I think it's detrimental, so I'd ask you to vote no on this division.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you. Let's keep debating. I love this. We've talked about vowels, train wrecks, fruit costs, alternative systems, and I would suggest to you these are all kind of delaying type tactics to win a debate. And frankly, we're talking about duly elected members having a choice on what tool they can have to do this job. That's what it's about. This thing's not going to crash, or us four or five rebels out there right now would have already crashed the system. I mean, I think those are all false arguments. And so I think competition, number one, is good. It's a cheaper product. It'll drive down the price. It'll make us more effective. And so I'd hope you'd hang with your committee number two appropriations as standing committee amendment and vote aye for choice, quality, and hang with your committee. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and please vote aye.
We're on Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 11. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question?
Aye.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. Would the ayes please stand? Noes, please stand. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division 1, has failed. We're back on Division 2. Madam Minority Caucus Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm against Division 2 of the Standing Committee Amendment. Friends, if you look at Division 2, Division 2 turns us to page 7, lines 1 through 9, and deletes it. When we look over at page 7, lines through 1 through 9, we have the Management Council allocating $20,000 to commission the addition of an element of Native American culture and history to the mural in room 302 of the State Capitol building. I find that this was a really good choice of the Management Council. That's a needed addition to that mural, and I would encourage us to resist this division of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also rise in opposition to Division 2. $20,000 to commission the addition of an element of Native American culture and history. Folks, I would submit to you that the Winter Reservation in this Wyoming was on in this territory before Wyoming became a state. The recognition of your Native American neighbors, I think, is a good neighbor policy. For $20,000, you're getting a good deal.
Representative Miller.
on and for the Division II. Ditto the last remarks. Ever since I've been coming down here, up in 302, you can look at that mural and look at all the activities in Wyoming. But it's a glaring omission to not have our Native Americans represented in it. So on and for, on and against Division II, this use that money and add that to the mural up there in 302. So on and against Division II.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for Division II, this was actually wasn't part of the original bill. This was added on as it sort of wound its way through the process. And the questions raised were not to the merits of adding this element to the mural or anything of that sort. But the fact is, remember, we just voted $259 million to move forward with an entire remodel reconstruction of this building. And it seems like whatever work we do in here should probably be coordinated as part of those efforts. And the other concerns were, you're not talking about commissioning an entirely new artwork for $20,000. You're talking about adding one element to an existing mural and spending $20,000 on it. And the question was, do you really need $20,000 to add one element to a single mural? So, I mean, this probably should be part of that. It probably should be part of the discussion. But as we move forward, and we're going to be out of this building for 2 years, it probably makes sense to have that be part of the overall discussion of the remodel of the Capitol rather than a part of a feed bill.
Representatives or Chairman's water, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, support deleting. I'm in favor of the second reading amendment. And it's not about the money. It's about, do we go and change somebody's idea of what they had back in the 80s, 30 years ago? Are we going to go back and start changing little details? As you look at that mural up in room 302, there's some other inaccuracies about it. You know, the railroad doesn't run in the southern part of the state. We have, like, the university over on the right-hand side. There's no skiers in there. I don't see a bald eagle in that picture. They put out a lot of prints, which I own one, a little small one at home. But it's not about the money. It's what the artist did at the time for what we asked them to do. If we're not happy with it, take it down. Let's spend whatever it takes to build a new one. But I just, you know, I look at if somebody didn't like the Mona Lisa the way it is and thought they should have a little mold above the lip, does somebody go in and say, oh, we're going to add that now? Do we stay politically correct? On and for.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our discussions were in our committee were really just about the money. This came in as a Senate amendment. Wasn't part of the original bill. We're told that perhaps they're going to have to cut that mural into four pieces to even get it out of the room for the renovations. And we thought, why spend $20,000? We're going to have to spend money down the road to put it all back together anyway. And we thought it was just premature. And so, and you'll see in the bill, there was virtually no money for art and for furnishings because that's going to all be redone here in just a few short years. So that's why we voted to take it out. So do what you wish. I don't want to make it any other issue than what that was. That was our discussion and why we did it in committee.
Chairman Madden? We are on Division 2 to Standing Committee Amendment 1 on Senate File 11. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. You're ready for the question. Having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
The amendment stands. We're back on the bill. And there are Committee of the Whole amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
The bill. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just quickly, I'll take us through the bill. You can see on Section 1, these are the general operating costs. You can see the amount for salaries for staff on page 1, and then the amount that goes to legislators in a session in the interim. Flipping over to page 2, you can see it's all spelled out as far as in-state travel, out-of-state travel for legislators and some staff, the annual dues to NCSL and CSG and others. Registration fees, telecommunications, general ITD, general administrative support, copy machines, those kind of things. Session law books, $405,000 on page 3. There's 40 I think our laws require that we print at least 40 copies that are distributed around the state, various libraries and entities. And so that's then there's a footnote on section one about laptop computer purchases, and that is we're going to have a new laptop role for our for the newly elected legislatures next session. Section two are about flex of funds that the management council can. The management council runs this whole feed bill. They vote and determine how this money is going to be spent. It gives them some general flex. That's been in this bill for years. Flipping over to page four. Standard provisions on travel. Section three at the very bottom of page three is for out-of-state travel. That's all decided by management council. And we'll look at that generally to these conferences. But others have to be run through management council. Section 4 is a carry forward of previous prior appropriations, and it takes you over to the amount is at the top of it. Talks about some of the descriptions on page 4 and over to page 5 about hiring consultants. I believe there's about $600,000 that will be carried over, and some of these things they're all approved by management council, but ECA studies and those kind of things are part of that. On line 10 on page 5 is about a $15,000 amount that, as you know, these computers can be purchased by you when a new computer upgrade goes forward, and so that deals to that computer sales. Romanet 3 on line 17 is the constituent service amount. Rolling over is about $70,000 in that amount. And if you roll that over to Section 5, you can see Section 5 is this biennium's appropriation for constituent service. And as you folks who have served in the House a while know that it has changed in the House, the quarterly payment used to require receipts only in the House of Representatives. And so that 70 plus the 515 will be the exact amount needed for going forward in this biennium. Okay, and so that appropriation will be $70,000 more in the future, barring any changes. Okay, the technology project on Section 6, the Chairman of Education asked about this. This is the second phase. The first phase began about $500,000 in 2011, and many of those have been tested here during this session. We're doing this at a considerably less money and getting the same results as our sister states in North Dakota and Illinois and others. So at least the information that we have, you can see on artwork on Section 7, $10,000, which is considerably less. Romanet 2, we were successful, so that $20,000 was taken out at this time. Section 8 on page 7 is new legislator compensation to attend committee meetings after the elections next fall, and when leadership decides what committees the new legislature sits on. If there's folks who are newly elected, we pay for them to attend, a mileage per diem to attend the committee meetings. So if you're going to be a new member of TRW, you can go to those meetings in the fall and get caught up on those things. Or for us existing, if we get reelected but committees change, you can get per diem to attend those of your new committee, those meetings. Okay, flipping over to page 8, it describes that. That's about $62,000. Then section 9 on page 8 is the reappropriation of school foundation funds. The previous funds I talked about were general funds. These are school foundation funds for K-12 responsibilities, modeling, some of the accountability work, other things. But these are all controlled by management council. Any consultants, any of those kind of things are all voted on by management council. Section 10 is a special contingency of $250,000. I think that was added on the Senate. I'd have to go back and look at the digest. I think, and then Section 11 was added on. We had talked about, and we had a prohibition in the governor's budget about using funds in those energy initiatives for legislative travel. This was where it was added in on Section 11 for these economic development energy. There's $50,000 for legislative travel. Again, be authorized by Management Council. It has some provisions. Obviously, folks who are not running for re-election, those kind of folks won't be able to travel. And then Section 12, finally, is the effective date. And unless identified as effective immediately, will be June 30th, 2016. So I'd stand for any questions. I see we have several amendments.
Representative D'Angelo, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 11 and ask for its favorable introduction. What this does, members, is put our per diem on par with the federal government's per diem rate. And let me explain to you why this is important. In 2005, we actually attached our mileage rate to be in line with the federal mileage rate through the State Auditor's Office. However, the per diem rate is up to us because we can't delegate it to be in line with the federal government because it's an unlawful delegation of authority. Basically, the problem with this, or why I'm bringing the amendment, is you've all seen it when we have interim committee meetings. You go to a hotel in Wyoming, and they only have one government rate. But the federal government rate is much higher, and they don't have a federal government rate and a state government rate, so most of us end up paying the federal government rate. The 129 is the par for the winter in most parts of Wyoming. But if you have a summer meeting, the federal per diem rate in the county where the mountains are is 236 for a summer meeting. County of the Southeast where the gas fields are, similar to 236 is what the federal government reimbursement rate and the government rate in many of these places are that the hotels are at. So if we go to interim committee meetings in any of these places, especially in the summer when everything's higher, it's normally 173 in our five major tourist destination towns. This just puts us on par for the next biennium. The federal per diem is not expected to decrease. It could perhaps increase, but at least for the next biennium, while this is in effect, our per diem rate would be at 129, which is equivalent to the feds, and you'll see the appropriation increase. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chairman Teeters.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I thought our per diem was more than that, so I was really disappointed to see that it was only $109, but that's just my own fault. I was curious if the good representative had looked into whether or not that this would apply to that law that we have on the books that says we can't raise our own salaries and whether or not that would be applicable in this instance. I'm sure that's been answered.
Representative Zwanscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That has been answered. Technically, this is per diem and not salary, and so you can vote on this, and it goes into effect July 1st. But because this is per diem and not a salary or benefit, it doesn't fall under that constitutional provision.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess one question I have is, have we looked into the possibility of just having special per diems when they're needed? I know a company that I used to work for, when we would travel, we had a standard per diem, but there were a handful of cities that we would travel to, and we got a little extra because they were more expensive. And my thought is, we don't need the extra per diem most of the time, especially not during our session. I don't think any of us have, have an issue living on the $109 during session and things, but I do agree there are, occasional times when it's there, and I think it might be a little more financially responsible to only bump the per diem on specific times when we need it.
Representative Zwanacher.
Mr. Chairman, certainly that is how the federal government does it and can allow their per diem rates based on individual cities or counties. For us to do that, we would have to probably come back every year, have a management council study and set different per diem rates based on different interim committee meetings. As I said, there are five unique areas in Wyoming where it is much higher than this 129. It's on average 173 for the summer months in those towns. And we certainly probably could do a policy in effect long term, but for this upcoming year, I thought it best to put in line with the lowest rate of the federal per diem, and that would alleviate some of the problems, especially those of us who may have summer committee meetings in the more tourist areas.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question. Was there any analysis done to see how this might impact boards and commissions? I know that there are many, many boards that have their salaries and per diems tied to ours. I just want to make sure we aren't inadvertently wrecking someone else's budget by changing this.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And did you look at just tying it to the federal rate, similar to what we do with minimum wage, where we don't have our rate is so low that it just matches the federal automatically?
Representative Swanager.
Thanks. To answer the last question first, We can't tie it to the federal rate because it's unlawful delegation of authority. And so we have done a similar thing with mileage that we basically allow the auditor to change every year on January 1st with parameters, which basically means whatever the Fed said, the auditor can set for all state employees. This just applies for the legislature. I did not do an investigation on how this may affect other boards and commissions, but I will immediately go do that before second reading to see if there is an impact on those budgets for the statutes that do say we may pay per diem in line and if there would be a greater effect.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. Chairman's monitor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the fact that we have just covered this in a discussion a few minutes ago, I would respectfully withdraw Amendment Number 2.
Amendment Number 2 is withdrawn. We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3 to Senate File 11 and ask for your favorable support. Members, this is really an issue that was brought to my attention this fall. We have we actually have the largest House district in the lower 48. We have the largest Senate district in the lower 48. And we have a couple other districts in this that are very large. And it was brought to my attention how one member in this body to go to each town and return home is 1,100 miles. And you do that part, it just doesn't work, the constituent service. I have a really pretty urban area. I mean, I can drive everywhere within about 30 miles. But so what this would do in Section 12, in Paragraph A, would say that Management Council would set the policy. You can't write in that this district and that district are large because then it's special legislation. But it says Management Council would determine what a large district is. And then if they want to do this, they can set up a method to reimburse these extraordinary mileage expenses and for travel within these districts. So there's appropriated to this fund, to Management Council, $10,000 if they want to address this issue. So I'd stand for any questions.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3 to Senate File 11. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion on the bill?
Question.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 11 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Senate File 11 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 113. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 113 from Senator Hicks, an act relating to natural gas, creating the task force for the expansion of natural gas service to rural and underserved cities and towns, requiring a report, providing an appropriation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9. Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to who is referred Senate File 13 engrossed, Task Force on Expansion of Natural Gas Service, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. There were 7 ayes, 2 noes, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with a recommendation due pass on Senate File 113, and I'll turn the explanation over to the good representative where our largest prison is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of this bill is to create a task force to explore the possibility of expanding natural gas service to the 36% of our cities and towns that are either underserved or unserved. The task force would review the legal and logistical issues associated with expanding natural gas service to the unserved areas. They would develop a preliminary estimation of the costs of expansion
and they would evaluate potential programs that could be implemented through the state or its agencies to expand natural gas services. The task force would then submit its findings and recommendations to the Joint Minerals Business and Economic Development Interim Committees and to the governor. And I'm not going to, there is an amendment on that, I think, on the date for that. Is that right?
Correct.
He's got to move the amendment, though, doesn't he?
Chairman Lockhart.
I know what it is, but he's got to move it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My error in not moving on the Standing Committee Amendment number one, and that's to delete a date of November and insert a date of December 15th. December, November 1, that's on page 4, line 3. And I'd urge your support of this adjustment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Goggles.
We're on the bill, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking to the expansion of natural gas service, I serve as a chairman for another select committee. And this task of expanding natural gas to rural areas should follow a sequence. Part of that sequence is one of our agencies dealing with public service. I went to a rate hearing and asked that particular company to provide a plan to service a particular rural area, which they did do. They also brought us a plan of the area that they would service. They also brought us a cost for that service. These things can be achieved, I believe, through interim committee work or one of our standing committee or our joint interim committees. I don't question the need for this. I support the need. What I do question is the expansion of committees to do this when there's already been a route established on how to do this work.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Against the bill, and I've got to admit part of it's just that at this point in the session I start suffering from task force fatigue. But the other concern I have and the question I have, I guess, is earlier this session, we had a bill that's now, I think, made it all the way through the process that set up a grant program through the State Loan Investment Board just for these types of issues and to help facilitate the extension of natural gas service. So since we've already implemented a plan or I'm just wondering why we need a task force to develop a plan if we've already passed legislation through that implements a plan.
Chairman Semlick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just was wondering if there's any discussion in the committee work on this bill that would suggest that we're truly picking winners and losers here. We've got a lot of hardworking propane distributors around the state that are providing a great service to their customers, and we're kind of stepping in front of them with support from our legislature to say that we're going to look and see how we can interfere with your business. And I just kind of bothers me. I just think if we're going to let it happen on its own, let communities get together where there's local input from those propane distributors and other fuel distributors and let them have some weight in this decision. I just don't think we should do it from this level on against the bill.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my main question is at this point, why can't a standing committee do this to see if the problem is such that a task force would be fruitful? If a standing committee did this, they could come up with a summary of the impediments of what we're faced with now, and if there's a point down the road where we need a task force because of your findings in the interim, then it makes sense. But I don't think that it's fair to set up a task force with the expectation that they're going to have an effect on expanding natural gas at this point. So I really question the wisdom of this task force at this time. Maybe a year from now, the standing committee would find that that's the way to go, but not now.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Minerals Committee is very familiar with the regulated utility industry and the complexity of how that works, and so we were familiar with that. But we were persuaded sufficiently to pass this bill in the Minerals Committee because there's some uniqueness that we don't attach to just the Public Service Commission and the expansion. It's to identify where the, if you will, spots are that we can do these kind of things more economically. And the committee, in their presentation to the Minerals Committee, was persuasive that this is a unique component of getting natural gas to our communities. It's a proven fact that if they get that, everybody benefits, and it's also a use of a resource that we have in our state that is probably underutilized because we haven't got this service in a number of our communities. So I would urge your support of the bill, and I hope that answers the question of why didn't we do it alone. It was because they've got a unique component of this, and that's identifying the communities that could be attracted and then bring something back to the committee.
Representative Paxton.
Just as a quick follow-up to what the chairman said, that was the testimony that we heard in committee, and I think the purpose of the committee is that I think it would shorten the process considerably if we could have it's supposed to be staffed by LSO staff, and there's so much information out there that needs to be gathered, so many unique situations that prohibit the use of or the expansion of natural gas. We need to find out that information. Best decisions are made with the most information, and that's all this is really doing, is trying to gather more information so we can move forward with it. It's a very small appropriation of only $5,000, and I would encourage your aye vote.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's kind of fun to get up and be for something for a change. I don't know all that much about the contents of the subject matter. Don't pretend to be. But I'm really pleased that instead of having a select committee and an advisory committee, which has an indeterminable life, we have before us a project that is going to terminate in December of 2014. It says also that it's going to terminate the committee. That seems to me that if the committee needs some outside support, And information that they can gather in this period of time, that it's thoughtful, supportable, on and for the bill.
Chairman Lockhart. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 113 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 113 has failed the Committee of the Whole. Division. All those in favor, please stand. Can we skip to the voice vote? Person
pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker. Barlow. Berger. Flake. Blevins. Flickery. Brown. Burkhart. Bird. Campbell. Kennedy. Coleman. Connolly. Davison. Eklund. Esquivel. Filer. Filer. Freeman. Gay. Gingery. Goggles. Greer. Green. Halverson. Harshman. Harvey. Hunt. Hutchings. Yagi. Kasparic. Kirkbride. Croker. Crone. Larson. Lockhart. Laux. Madden. Mater. McKim. Miller. Moniz. Nicholas. Northrup. Patton. Paxton. Petroff. Pieperinen. Reeder. Simlick. Summers. Stubson. Teeters. Throne. Walters. Watt. Wilson. Winters. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker. Filer. Filer excused. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 14 aye, 45 no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, Senate File 113, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, there's a new order of the bills on general file in your basket. After Senate File 113, which we just did, the order of bills will be Senate File 39, Senate File 97, Senate File 28, Senate File 30, Senate File 96, Senate File 14, Senate File 106, and Senate File 63. And I just might remind everyone, maybe some aren't aware, today's the last day on general file for bills in this session. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 39. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 39 from Senator Christensen, an act relating to state lands, authorizing the Board of Land Commissioners to exchange certain land parcels as specified, creating the State Land Exchange Advisory Panel, providing for panel membership and duties, providing a definition, extending the date for the transfer of lands as specified, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred, Senate File 39 engrossed, Grand Teton National Park transfer of state lands, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. There were 6 ayes and 1 no, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harshman? And we do have a standing committee amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've moved that when the committee of the whole rise to report to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 39 do pass, and I further move the adoption of standing committee amendments to explain the amendments and the bill to good representative from the Tetons.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I encourage you to vote aye on the amendment. It doesn't change the substance of the bill in any way, but it does add some important sideboards. These sideboards were already included in the amendment to the agreement that the state and their principles that the state lands office had already planned to apply. So I think it's great that we add them to the bill. And if there are no questions on the amendment, I will call for the question.
Question has been called for. All those in favor say aye. Opposed say no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 39 authorizes the State Lands Board to consider an exchange of 2 school sections within Grand Teton National Park for other federal lands and minerals in Wyoming. I'm going to be up here for a little while because this is an important $100 million decision, and so I want everyone to really understand what we're talking about. In our acts of admissions for statehood, we were given certain lands for certain purposes to hold in trust, and most of those lands were for common or public schools. It was Section 16 and 36 out of every township. And we accepted those lands. It's addressed in Article 18 of our Constitution as well as addressed in statutes. And it's our fiduciary responsibility as trustees of those lands and of the permanent school land fund that we maximize the income from these lands to the benefit of our school trust. That's what these lands are for. There are a number of things we can do with school lands, and generally, if they're of a permanent nature, they go into the corpus of the school trust. And if they're of an ongoing nature, they generally go into the income account. So, for instance, a grazing lease on school lands would go into the income account, timber production would go into the income account, mineral royalties would go into the permanent school land trust, with the exception of the first $8 million, but we're long past that. That's a pretty small percentage. So most mineral revenues go into the corpus. We can also trade lands. And interestingly, the state lands boards authorized to make trades with the federal government for lands without coming to us. But generally, on something of this size, they are going to come to us and get the legislative approval. It also is required in this case because 3 years ago we entered into an agreement to sell these lands, and that was something that was approved by this legislature in 2010. And part of that bill included that we have to come back to the legislature if we want to do something different other than sell those lands to the Department of the Interior. So that leads into these properties specifically. What we're talking about in this bill is two full school sections within Grand Teton National Park. And so what happened, when Grand Teton National Park was formed, it essentially encapsulated these school sections, and they became a de facto part of the park. One of the sections is a complete in-holding, and there's no road access to that section. The other section, there is a corner of it that has a road access. It's essentially three sides of it are park, and one side of it is the border of the park. That section earns $1,680 a year in a grazing lease, and not a great return of investment on a $91 million property, although, you know, for both properties. For decades, and literally there are records going back into the mid-60s, we've been trying to negotiate with the Department of the Interior for some type of trade for lands that we can generate income from. There was a big effort to do this in the late 1990s and early 2000s, and out of frustration of feeling like the federal government was not coming with any kind of, you know, really significant lands that we could consider, our then governor threatened to auction the lands. And it was out of that threat to auction the lands that the Department of the Interior came back and negotiated for the purchase. The purchase that we approved in 2010 was for four parcels. It was for these two big parcels and for two smaller parcels. The two smaller parcels, the purchases were complete, but for these big parcels, the Department of the Interior realized about a year ago that they were not going to be able to get the appropriations they needed to complete the sale, and they began a negotiation process with the State Lands Board to try to trade for some lands. If you'll recall the discussions from 2010, a lot of folks preferred that we do a land exchange. And that was, you know, I would say the overall feel was that we preferred a land exchange, and we're finally getting the opportunity to do that. And here are some of the sideboards on the agreement. Number one, we're not committing to anything. We're just, or the State Lands Board is not committing to anything. They're just committing to enter into these negotiations. They can walk away from any deal that they don't think is fair. They can reject any appraisal that they don't think is fair just because they don't think it's fair. They can reject an appraisal on the Teton parcels. They can reject an appraisal on the parcels we're trying to exchange for. The Teton parcels will be reappraised. If they appraise for higher than the $91 million, then that's the price we use to negotiate the trade. If they appraise for a price lower than the $91 million, we still use the $91 million appraisal because we're not giving them the benefit of breaching the original purchase contract with us. Both parcels will be appraised as if they had road access, which, as I mentioned, one is inaccessible. The Antelope Flat section is currently landlocked. The priority for exchanges are unified estates, so they would be surface and mineral estates, or mineral estates where we currently own surface, or surface where we currently own minerals. The goal is to unite as many estates, or to own as many united estates as we can. The lands will be exchanged, and this is kind of the heart of the theory of how we make money on this. The lands are exchanged, land value for land value. Okay? What we lose in the potential to increase, the speculative value of increase for Teton land property, we gain that in the speculative value of the minerals that we're getting for this exchange. Okay? So that is essentially what we're exchanging. We'll receive at least the $71,000 an acre that is currently appraised for the Teton parcels. So if we exchanged for land valued at, say, $1,400 an acre, we would get 50 times the amount of land we have now, or 100 square miles of land with mineral rights. Those are minerals. We get 100% of the lease bonuses, 100% of the royalties. Our royalties aren't going to be held up by sequestrations or other whims of the federal government. We can approve production in about 30 days as opposed to the federal government, which takes 10 or 12 times that amount of time. And then there are all the other intangibles that go with this, like the creation of jobs, which you don't get by just holding on to the Teton parcels for their speculative land increases. It extends our current agreement by almost 1 year to the end of 2016, which is an extraordinarily fast time to accomplish a deal like this. Typically, land exchanges with the federal government take 5 to 8 years, but they are very motivated to do it right now, and so we have set a very aggressive and achievable time limit. I have a lot of information. I spent the weekend researching land sales in Teton County and lands that are for sale. I talked to realtors. I talked to county commissioners. Rather than take the time to share that with you now, I'll just wait to see if there are questions about the speculative land value. But I've got a lot of information on that if that's something that's interesting to you. So for now, I will stand for questions.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a quick question, because I don't know what this means, looking at the amendment. When if we value a mineral estate, we're going to say in accordance with the industry standard and in the normal method used for valuing unproven mineral resources. Now, I'd like to see this. We say we shall account for the state's existing proportional share. Here's my thing. Well, I wish that we could get all of the federal government 75% of our minerals back. That would be nice. But the value to the state of Wyoming for the minerals is really just the value of the royalty payment, because we're not producing those ourselves. And we do get close to half of that royalty back, which I see is accounted for. So my question is, when we value those minerals, we're just going to look at the value of one half of the royalty stream. Is that correct?
Representative Petro?
Mr. Chairman, that's actually not correct. The value for unproven minerals is next to zero. So there's really, and that's where the speculative value of that is sort of being exchanged for the speculative value of increasing values in land in Jackson Hole, because we're talking about unproven minerals, and there's a very, very tiny amount that is allotted to, you know, to that value.
Representative Greer?
Mr. Chairman, and I agree with you, unproven minerals have very little value. But it's still, again, we're not going to value the minerals. All we should be looking at is the value of the royalty stream, because we derive no benefit other than the royalty stream from those minerals, whether it's small amount or large amount.
Representative Petroff.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, my understanding is we're actually valuing land to land. We don't have an income stream at all from the lands in Teton County other than $1,680. So we're valuing land for land, and then the speculative mineral, you know, the increase in the mineral royalties that we would be getting, or the lease bonuses, you know, that is all the speculative value, not a value that we're actually trading for. Does that make sense?
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'll take a shot at it. I think I have the same question as the good representative from Washakie County. When we trade for surface and minerals, the minerals have a value. They're the great big master subset value. And so I think what the good representative from Washakie County is the total value of those minerals may be what we trade for, and we may need to put some additional restrictions in this bill. But the income stream that we get off of those minerals isn't the full value of the minerals. It's a certain percentage based upon the royalty that we get back from our oil and gas lease. If we do a good job negotiating 20 or 21%. And so I think what the good representative from Washakie County is concerned about is that we buy or we trade for $100 million worth of minerals and we only get $21 million worth of income in return because we're only getting a royalty stream. And so when we value the minerals, I guess we need to look at it in an income approach rather than a purchase approach for the value of the minerals. And I was wondering if maybe the sponsor of the bill would be amenable to an amendment that did that kind of focus, because you'll have to forgive me. I've learned not to trust the federal government in some negotiations, this being one of them, where we fix a price and then they suddenly decide not to go through with it for whatever reason.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two inquiries or two clarifications I need. One is, it sounds to me, and when I read the language in the bill, it sounds like to me, for the two current state school sections that we're talking about trading, the state will actually retain the minerals on those two sections. If that's not the case, then I think there needs to be some clarity put into B on page 2 for me personally. Second is, I think I've heard or seen some other language elsewhere about the expansion or the increase in state lands. We've had some concern. We've talked about conservationism and other things. We've had several purchases by the State Lands Investment Board in recent years buying large parcels of lands. This would be, I would argue, based on the value of those two parcels and the subsequent value you may be able to find elsewhere in the state for exchange, I think there would be a significant expansion potentially of surface acres. So if there is elsewhere in statute a provision that we have some limitation on that, let's make sure we're understanding that so we don't hogtie our State Lands Investment Board. Thank you.
Representative Petrov.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that no net gain of state lands is certainly something that they're aware of and considering in this whole process. But remember that these are federal lands. We're not going out and buying private lands. These are federal lands that would be going into state hands. And so they recognize that they would have to target other state lands that would be for sale privately. And the advantage of that is if we sell state lands privately, now we're going to be also collecting property tax on those lands. And you know, again, we're essentially taking more land acreage from the federal government to the state and then into the hands of private individuals. And I think that's a win-win-win.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. And in response to my good friends from up in the Washakie County area and up where the coal's dug out, in terms of valuations of property, those are the exact discussions that we had in appropriations about how you value and somehow set a fair market for what we get on the exchange. And so what we did, and we think we put the sidebars already on it, that we protected exactly what you're talking about. And the way that we, for example, if we just got $100 million worth of, say, known mineral deposits, to hire a company to go in and develop and to do all those things isn't, it's probably closer to almost a billion or $2 billion cost, an infrastructure, all those things you got to do, and then you get royalties off of that. And so your ultimate royalties, and if you get half of that on federal lands, it has to be a huge, huge amount of minerals in order to justify whatever that trickle-down mineral interest that we would receive from the federal properties. And so we said, you can't even consider that. instead of sitting there and trying to balance out saying what's this going to be worth for minerals, we're saying we're not going to consider that those known mineral valuations. We're buying the land for the land property value as if you were selling, basically if you're selling a ranch. If you had a ranch and you had mineral interests and you own 100% of mineral interests and you sold it to somebody else, then that person would go in and evaluate it and they'd look at your surface use and they'd look at your mineral rights and say this is how much you're going to pay. And if you happen to have coal underneath, or if you happen to have oil under the ground, or possibility of it, then that's kind of wrapped into the purchase price. So the grounds that we want from the federal government will be grounds with known mineral deposits and mineral reserves, but we're going to require basically the fair market value of what those are, considering the fact that if we own them, we're going to want to make more than just the royalty, because we get half the royalty. And that could be $2 or $3 billion to take $100 worth of known mineral deposits to act that much in order to get a royalty out of it. So we said, we're not going to sit here and play the valuation games. We're going to buy it for what the value is, and we're going to get all the minerals, and that's just the way it's going to happen. And that way it takes into all that process, the thought analysis of saying we're going to get somehow taken by the federal government and not get our fair just reserves. So we really have kind of walked through that process. And if we've got further amendments to tighten that up, ratchet that a little further, that's fine. But we definitely went through that process.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It will be in the real estate business and to try and have some equity. And if the federal government demands the full ownership of the Teton properties and its minerals, then the equity would be to turn it around and say, okay, we'll do that, but we want 100% of the minerals under the land that we get. I do understand that they're not so dumb as to let us look at mineral-producing property and not want to include it in the valuation. But my point is to try and negotiate and provide with legislation here that offers the negotiation ability to try and have an equity, and that equity is on the table to begin with at the onset, not afterwards, and after a measure has been passed and some engagement has been made. So on and for the bill with that kind of an understanding and condition. If it needs to be put in the bill, let's put it in the bill.
Representative Petra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I did not answer the other question from the gentleman from Bighorn who was talking about the mineral rights from the Teton parcels. And, yes, it is intended that the mineral rights will go with the Teton parcels. And once again, it would make sense that we would be trading for some value of the minerals we're getting, but we're actually not. We're getting those minerals for essentially nothing. But what we're exchanging is that the lands that we're getting probably don't have the chance for appreciation the way that the Teton lands are appreciated. And so the way that the state lands office is looking at it is as though the minerals have no value.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the standing committee amendment, and particularly where I had a hang up with this, and I'm going to support the bill, but I would really encourage the body to dive into this and get educated on this. I would say that the last Teton County land swap bill that really authorized this, we sold two parcels already. One was quite small, mineral lease for $2,000. And then I think the other one was it $16 million? I look back and it was just a shame we sold that for $16 million. And I think what the framework going forward in this bill takes into, and particularly in the standing committee amendment, paragraph F, the Teton lands were zero 100 years ago. It's $100 million now. It'll be $101 million next month. And it's going to go, and I know real estate goes up and down, but this is going to go up and up and up and up. And I think it's very important that we take into the future speculative value of these lands. I think that's $1,300 a month grazing or a year, whatever it is. I just think that's part of the argument. I think access not even part of the argument. These are priceless lands. They're in the priceless spot of the world, and they're going to go up, up, up. And so whatever we trade it for ought to also have the ability to go up, up, up through mineral production. And so I'm going to support the bill as it's amended. I would encourage all of us, because I think of the 60 collective minds in here, many of you have some real expertise in this area, and to really delve into this and study this and make sure that we have the very best product as it leaves this floor. It'll be our last chance. And I think we didn't probably do that a few years ago with the first sale. So on and for the bill. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, I like this idea. I don't disagree with the previous speaker. I think this land's going to continue to generally increase in value. We're going to have the occasional sawtooth pattern where it goes up and then comes back down a little bit. But what I like about this is trading a section of land here for a township of land somewhere in central Wyoming or northeast Wyoming that's basically controlled by the federal government, especially in areas that really don't look like they have any mineral potential now. You know, a few years ago, we didn't know we had rare earths elements in Wyoming. 30 years ago, we didn't know we had diamonds in Wyoming. I doubt if half of the body here knows we have diamond deposits in Wyoming. I'd like to get all those underneath state ownership, and you talk about a perpetual mine or perpetual revenue source for our schools going into the future. Trading a section for a township, I'm all for it.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 39 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Senate File 39 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 97. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 97 from Senator Coe, an act relating to economic development, providing an appropriation to the revolving investment fund created pursuant to Article 16, Section 12 of the Wyoming Constitution, providing for loans for economic development projects specified, requiring matching funds, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to who was referred Senate File 97 engrossed, Large Fund Economic Development Loans, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman, and further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 6 ayes and 1 no, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 97 do pass. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. I'd like to turn the explanation of both the amendment and the bill or the Senate file over to the good representative from House District 50.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 97 is a vehicle that we're going to use to do large projects. Senate File 97 is made possible by a common amendment known as Amendment Number 4. It's Article 16, Section 12, and it's known for its Amendment 4 for its position in the ballot in the 1986 ballot. The funds appropriated to the revolving fund under Article 4 require a two-thirds vote for both houses of the legislature. Funds within the account shall not exceed 1% of the total assessed valuation of the state, which is roughly $15 to $20 billion. These Article 4 funds can be used for loans from a 0 to 2% interest rate, or can be used to provide loan guarantees to proposed or existing entities within the state, which will provide one or many of a list of economic benefits to the state. So as you look into the Senate File 97, as you look through it, you'll see that the list of economic benefits that are required within 97 is a list of promoting aid to economic development. You must employ people within the state, must provide services to the state, use resources within the state, and add to the economic value of the state. There's many processes that it's going to take to get this loan. There's going to be fingerprints all over it, one of which is the governor. The governor is the first person to look at this loan. He'll take his time and go through it and recommend the size and parameters of it. The next in line is the state treasurer. He's going to look at the structure of the loan or the loan guarantee. And after that, then the Wyoming Business Council will review it under Wyoming Statute 9-12601 to 9-12603. The Wyoming Business Council then recommends to the State Loan and Investment Board for final approval of the loan and the loan guarantee. At this point, then, the loan will go back to the governor for final approval for requirement of this act. After that, then, the state treasurer gets the final approval to the structure of the loan. And at that point, we're up to page 4, where it says at the bottom of the page, under little I, economic impact and public benefit greater than the economic impact and public benefit of projects regularly funded under the Wyoming Business Ready Community Programs. So based upon the findings, 3I, an independent third party will go back and look at everything that the Wyoming Business Council has done, and they're going to come back and say the creation of a significant expansion of permanent jobs, the assessed valuation in the counties, it will be increased. There will be a substantial increase in sales sales and property taxes. There will also be a promote a stable, balanced, and diversified economy. Remember, the governor in his speech that he gave us last year was asking us to look at outside of the mineral industry for these kind of loans or these kind of programs, and that's what we're looking for. Private investment into the county or counties in the buildings, equipment, or direct projects, infrastructure, are not less than 3 times the amount of any of the loan guarantees, and also that it has a high likelihood of completion. The state treasurer shall establish the terms of any loan. Okay, and then, so it goes through and says under little I, the loan under this section shall be adequately collateralized. Second little I, the treasurer shall adopt interest rates to be charged for loans under this section. The third I, the state treasurer shall ensure through certification of the applicant or any other manner determined to be adequate by the state treasurer, a commitment of private funds in an amount which is at least 3 times the loan value. IV is loans or loan guarantees shall be used for direct investment into the project and should not be used or made available to finance pre-existing debt incurred before commencement of the project. This list continues down, talks about what the borrower's balance sheet's going to have in it, going to talk about what security will be offered, going to talk about that the state treasurer will require a loan guarantee by affiliates of the borrower, and number 8 is the state treasurer shall secure either the first security interest or primacy within it from the prime lender, and that's part of the amendment that I have. The state treasurer has changed that language just slightly, so if you'll permit me to finish on, we'll come back to the amendment. Number 9 is the state treasurer, and the word is now shall charge a loan origination fee of 1% to the total loan, so that we're getting paid for that work that's being done. In item E, the loan is or loan guarantee shall be made under this act without the written opinion of the Attorney General. So the Attorney General is going to look at the loan, he's going to check the constitutionality of it, and then he will make sure that all the legality of it is correct. The repayment of the principal and the interest to the state shall be deposited into the large project account created by this act. It doesn't go back to the city or the entity which has asked for this loan, as many of them do. The total principal balance of outstanding loans under this act shall not exceed the amounts appropriated by the legislature, plus interest accrued, and they collect less and collected less any losses of loan principal on the bottom of page 8. Top of page 9, the state treasurer is authorized to employ experts as necessary to fully evaluate and negotiate the terms and conditions of the loan and the loan guarantees. And finally, on section H, the state treasurer shall promulgate rules necessary and regulations to implementation of this section. So the state treasurer's got a lot of work to do in this. Section 3, the holding account created by the 2014 House Bill 001, Section 300 NIA, is where we appropriated that money from for this fund. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move into the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to Senate File Number 97. And as you look at this, what you see first off is that there's a whole bunch of changes and corrections. We use the wrong guarantee. It should be the other guarantee. Let's see. As you go down through there, expands is on page 5, line 9, line 11. Expands is increases. Guarantees, again, more loan or loan guarantees. Turn the page. We have more guarantees. Here is the substance of what you're looking for in the page 7, 18 through 24 lines. The state treasurer shall secure an interest in the entire project sufficient to adequately protect the investment of the loan proceeds or proceeds guaranteed by the state under this section. The state treasurer may accept either the first security interest on the entire project funded or substitute security which will protect repayments of the state on a basis substantially equivalent to a first security interest on the project. The state treasurer shall ensure that any alternate security is sufficient to sufficient to protect the state's interest in the entire project, and any alternate security places the state's before any other lender in priority of payment on the entire project of the event. So what that says is that we are first on the loan. If there's a default that occurs, the state will be first regardless of what position we are, and that way the state is protected. With that, I stand for questions.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment 1.
I ask for a favorable recommendation on this amendment and ask for you to pass it, please.
Thank you, Representative Northrup. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Semlich.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the explanation of this bill was good, and it sounds very reminiscent of the type of due diligence that many of us have to go through after the crash of the banking industry in 2009. It's the diligence that occurred after that is it's appropriate and sometimes very overwhelming. The question that I have is, I think we need to consider as this proposal goes forward is can this project go forward without the state loan guarantee? And if it can, well, then I'm curious to know why are we competing with the private financial institutions if this project can go forward? If it can't go forward, then I'm wondering why would we subsidize, you know, a project like this under this program that the private banking financial institutions across our states. So I guess my question is, was there any testimony from the bankers across Wyoming with respect to this bill, and did they have any concern about the state getting involved in the banking business?
Representative Cohn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill. We've heard a lot of discussion during this budget session about where we're at financially. We've heard a lot of discussion about coffee cans and how affected we are by forces outside of our control, forces that we cannot deal with, whether that be the weather, whether that be world markets, whether that be the federal government policy, et cetera. So back in 1998, this body decided to try to diversify our economy and try to support the industries that we have here, but in addition, move away from just minerals or just tourism or the combination therein. And so the Business Council was formed. And the Business Council's purpose was to develop existing businesses, expand those existing businesses, to look at opportunities to have companies from other places come to this, our state, to be in our favorable economic climate. And what have we seen over the past 15 or 16 years? We've seen success with that. We've seen success with expanding local businesses that were homegrown in Wyoming. We've also seen success in bringing businesses into Wyoming from other places. And I would look at just this corner of the state and what we've seen in the last 3 or 4 years in terms of the large investments that were made by private companies that want to do business in Wyoming, that want to do business in our state. And so because of that success, because of the success of the program, the Business Council program, that's why Senate File 97 is moving forward. It's an attempt, and if you look at the statutory configuration, it's in the 912-100 at CEQA series, which is the Business Council. It's expanding for these large projects. We've been successful, and as a result of that success, we need to expand the program. And as my good representative from the county with two number ones on your license plate, two number ones in your heart, as mentioned in his debate today, this bill is crafted to have multiple safeguards. You have at the beginning of the process, you have the chief executive reviewing it. Then the chief executive sends it to the person that controls the purse strings, and the person that controls the purse strings sends it to the Business Council, that sends it to the State Land and Investment Board, that goes back to the chief executive. There are tremendous safeguards in this bill. There are tremendous ways for if there's a project that moves forward that isn't a good fit, that isn't an appropriate use of this program, it can be stopped, and it can be stopped on several levels. In addition, we have the issue of proper collateralization and the state having the first interest in that. So, ladies and gentlemen, I see this as an expansion of a program that's worked. I see it with appropriate safeguards within the statutory language. I see this as a real opportunity for us to continue and to double down on what I think we all believe is a priority for Wyoming, and that is to diversify our economy and to bring in other types of jobs. And I'd like to talk specifically about the project. My friend from Powell did hand out that's in your box. I want to talk specifically, just briefly, about the opportunity that exists in northwest Wyoming right now. We have an opportunity to double the amount of employees at an existing company, a solid company, a publicly traded company, a company that has a long history of being successful. We have an opportunity to grow that business, expand that business, and they're anteing up, and they're putting skin in the game, and they're putting about $71 million of skin in the game. So they would apply, this would apply directly to them and to that expansion, and those safeguards that are in this bill would apply. But it's not only about this project in northwest Wyoming. This bill is broader than that. It's for future large projects and future expansion of these types of investment. And I would say one of the greatest things we can do is to continue the hard work of diversifying our economy. And I would urge your aye vote for Senate File 97. Thank you.
Representative Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As much as I would really like to tell you how much I support this bill, I am going to declare a conflict.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We started a program similar to this back in 86 with the revolving loan investment program. I don't think we have the safeguards that are built into here, but I will tell you, we lost about $18 million on that program when we started it up, very similar to what we're doing with this program. We've had some large projects go on around the state without House Bill 97. And because we want more money, all of a sudden we come up with a way for the state government to have the ability to give more money. And we just did one not too long ago that just scared the heck out of me for $13 million, and then with other donations it's up above that. But this one is doubling what we did, and we're creating a whole new system. And if you look at the loan repayment, that is a big deal that everybody's pushing, loan repayment. At 1% on $25 million, that's not bad, folks. That's a good way to get money. And another thing, I just don't like the government politics entering into projects. And there were numerous safeguards built into this, but I would like this company to take their $75 million, go to a bank, and say, we want to borrow $25 million, and what can you do for us? We've got all the collateral we need. Instead of coming to a special bill and trying to say, well, let's set up a special way that the government can get into this. I just think we're on the old slippery slope. I'm not agreeable with this at all. I would urge you to not support this bill.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To address a couple things, this bill is a process. It's not about a particular project. And this is about a process that is the right way to do it, rather than the way we've been doing things the last few years. And so with the last speaker, I'd like to have him open his mind. Listen to me here. Because what we have is this is mandated in our Constitution with a vote of the people that we want economic development. Okay? This loan process or loan guarantees was set up and was mandated to us by the people of the state of Wyoming. And this is a much better approach to economic development than what we've been doing on the recent projects that have created some controversy. What this will do is instead of seeing the repayments or that coming back to our local CDOs and that money being used for questionable expenses, what this will do is these funds will come back into this account, into this revolving account. So I need to back up just a little bit. What we're voting on here today is not the process. We're voting on the appropriation to continue to use this process. Okay, this process is in place. It's in place in our Constitution. This particular bill has the catch term, I guess, for this session is sideboards, but has some of those protections that are put into it that have been discussed by the other sponsors of the bill. What we're trying to accomplish is a more controlled economic development for projects that we see that are ready to move in. And so instead of seeing our rules blurred so that those projects can move forward, what we're going to do is bring that back to this house and the other house and say, you know what, we're going to look at an appropriation to this revolving account, and it'll be an account, a 2014 account. And it'll be used for projects that pass through all the due diligence that's listed here. And that'll go out, and that'll help our economic development. And then those funds would come back into this loan. So what are we funding this with? If you look in our budget account, we set up the SIPA, and we identified a component of the SIPA. Well, the SIPA will be our capital gains that aren't booked just yet. Those are capital gains that may come in and may be booked in June. If that happens, then what we're saying is we're going to appropriate part of those funds over into this economic tool to be used for these loans. And getting back to, I wanted to address the comments of our good chair of agriculture, who always asks good chairs or good questions. This actually helps the banking industry. If you look at that, some of these projects can't get off the ground. So this is that little incentive, that little boost to help that happen. loan guarantees or loans on that first part of risk that we can come out of here allows the banking industry to be able to step in and move forward with some of these. You know, we have time and time again engaged as a state in economic development. You've heard me this whole session criticize some of the actions that have been taken on some of these projects. The reason being is because I've seen rules blurred, bended, terms utilized in the wrong way. When we start talking about repayment of grants, recapture of grant payments, it's coming out of a budget footnote from a couple years ago. This is upfront and it's clear. And what it's saying is the state of Wyoming needs to diversify its economy. And this is a great mechanism to do it. And we're the ones that control that. We decide right now of what we're going to put in that for economic development, for diversity of our economy. And we've got the sideboards. I like that term. We have sideboards on here to make sure that it goes through the right due diligence process. So I think we need to move towards this. I say that this is a future of economic development. We just have to look back to what we had set up in the past, what our voters had set up. We need to move away from the things we've done in our just recent past. Now, vote this forward, and I assure you, and you saw my Senate File 100 come through, we're going to look at some of the things we've just done in the recent past. This is the best vehicle. This is what we should be doing for economic development in this state. I encourage you to vote for it.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is really new ground that we're plowing here. This program is quite new, and particularly in its process. And the one thing that bothers me is the business of we're taking money out of the state treasury and putting it into a loan as though the state treasurer was a banker. Well, the state treasurer is not a banker, and he's not equipped to be a banker. So the real thing that we need to do is to support the state treasurer if we are going to pass and get into this kind of a venture. My suggestion is on the amendment that we passed on subsection 8, page 7, lines 18, where it says the state treasurer shall secure an interest in the entire project sufficient and so forth. I'd like to strengthen that in behalf of the state of Wyoming and have it say something to the effect, the state treasurer shall secure a first security interest on the entire project funded with the loan proceeds issued under this section. If you pass this, I propose to present that as a second reading amendment. With that, your consideration is a venture to a new program.
Representative Hutchings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a question on the bill. Can you explain to me how this differs from the State Land Investment Board fully? Because I know one of our previous members mentioned that this process, it would go through the SLIB also. Can you explain that to me?
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to answer that question. In the question was, why does this go through the SLIB board process? Is that the SLIB is our agency that has the expertise in terms of analyzing requests on these projects and setting out the loan parameters and any grant parameters that are associated with it. So I think that's just the extent of their involvement. I don't know if I quite understood the question. Sorry.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, in answer to the representative from District 27, actually the scariest part of this bill is that the legislature still has some control over it. And to that regard, I think that I'm looking at 601, 912-601, and I'm trying to find out where that limit of 2% is. The only thing I can see on the limit of that is that grant grants and loans should be made at no or low interest, that small c. And I don't know why, you know, this fund is a bond, you know, it's a kind of comes out of our pooled investment portfolio, I guess, pooled fund. And there's got to be some return there that's comparable to what we make in that. And I know it's not a lot, but it's probably more than 2%. It might be 3 or 4, I don't know, over the last 4 or 5 years. So that's something that concerns me a little bit. The other thing that concerns me, there's a lot of moving parts to this whole thing elsewhere in the legislature, for example. And I'm glad we see the lines on page 2 of the amendment, lines 38 to 45. That's very important in there because management audit does have a study going on about these, that concerns these kind of bills or programs and what they've cost us over the long run and what, you know, how we have sunk into more and more involvement in competing with the financial sector of the private economy. And we're going to have an answer on that probably in less than a year from now. And so the thing is, we're going to have a timeout here in 2016 on this. If this money hasn't been spent and gone, we can maybe back up and say, look, we found some things here we need to change in this. But that, I guess my question is, can't we use an opportunity value for this to kind of ease our mind a little bit? And if not, I don't see where it says in the statute that we have to 2% is the limit. I know the lower limit's zero, but I didn't see an upper limit.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, folks, I when asked last year when I went home what I liked most about the legislature, I told everybody what I liked was the history that went along with this body for identifying needs within the state and being proactive and how we've been able to be fiscally responsible for and putting our state in a position that really allows us to move forward in a positive way. And it's been people before us that had great ideas and then found a vehicle to employ those ideas to help things move forward in this state. People like you and I who sit down and have had these discussions just like we're having today. And it's fun to look back historically just a little bit, and you can do that as you peruse through the Constitution. You know, you look there back in 1939, in Article 16, Section 6, the Constitution, it prohibited the state from engaging in any work of the internal works unless approved by 2/3 vote of the people. And somewhere, one of these good old boys said, whoa, 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 what about water? You mean we're going to have 2/3 vote every time we work on water? And so in 1939, they passed Section 10 of Article 13. They come back and says, no, that works fine except for water, and we're going to allow that to happen because it needs to carry on. So they adjusted the Constitution. They had an idea and they created the vehicle to allow water projects to continue to go forth. In 1974, a group of people says, you know, our minerals are finite and, you know, someday we could run out of those minerals, and what do we do when that happens? And so somebody probably sitting around the table with the governor or whatnot or wherever says, you know, we ought to start rat-holing some of that severance tax money. And so in 1974, they put to a constitutional vote that we start putting 1.5% of all our severance revenue into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. They had an idea. They created the vehicle to allow that to move forward. Not in the too distant past, we had some members of the House and the Senate, some probably of which we still know, that were probably sitting around a table sometime and saying, you know, how can we enhance the educational value for our students coming out of our high schools to go to our community colleges and the University of Wyoming? And they thought, what if we could provide, we could stick some money aside to provide loans, to provide scholarships for these kids. And so in 2006, in Section 20 of Article 15, they
They come up, they come up with a vehicle for higher education trust funds investment earnings, which was the vehicle that allows us to have the Hathaway scholarship. Back in 1986, the amendment that our good representative from up in Park County referred to, we'd done the same thing. We had an idea, how can we stimulate and encourage economic growth within the state, which I personally feel is critically important in the past and will be long after we leave this body. And in that Section 12, it says that the investment fund created by this section shall be used to provide fully funded loan guarantees or loans to proposed or existing enterprises which will employ people within the state, provide services within the state, use resources within the state, or otherwise add economic value to goods, services, or resources within the state. Now, this vehicle was sent out, and this state, most of us here, except for some of you younger ones, voted for this, and it passed. And what's happened in this session, and this is one of the most exciting pieces of legislation, in my opinion, to come out this session, is somebody had an idea. How can we enhance economic growth? And with the understanding that there has been some hiccups along the way. Our good representative from House District 27 pointed out, how do you recapture grants? You know, we're going to fix that. And we're going to fix it largely based on the model that is coming out of this bill. There, I just am really pleased with the knowledge and the expertise that's gone into this bill to provide a vehicle that we can allow future economic growth to take place in this state. I know that we talk large funds, and a lot of it, and when we talk the money that would maybe be involved in this certainly reaches past what I would ever anticipate that I would be part of in my business in securing, but we know that it's an everyday need in business today to have that they're working with monies of this size and this value. I like this bill. I stand in favor of the bill, and I would certainly hope that the rest of the body would do likewise.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have three inquiries within the bill that go to what this bill is, how this bill may be different than our current structure. First, on page 5, line 5, line 4 and 5, it talks about findings of an independent third party. So my question is that something that's in current statute when we reference the Business Ready Community Program? If so, I'd like some explanation of what that third party process is and who generally or what entity is generally in charge of that. Next question would be on the bottom of page 6, line 19 through 23. This talks about the 3X private funds that would be necessary for a requested loan. And I want to be clear, is this equity? Is this cash in the bank that these applicant would have? Or is this actually loans? Is this actually another piece of money that is being loaned? So I want to be clear that I understand if we're talking about their part as in actual equity, or is it actually equity that may be in loans? The third, in that vein, gets us to the security, and it seems challenging to me to believe that we could have a first preference for security or a equivalent preference when we have less than a 25%, if you have the 3X plus the 1X the state would put in, how we could possibly expect to have first security or an equivalent thereof. So if those questions could be addressed, I'd be very appreciative. Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, and great questions. To the first question regarding the independent third party or those expertise, my understanding is sometimes this has been done by the business council, other times they hire outside sources. What they're looking at is they want independent findings to show, and this also goes to our return, I think the Chair of Revenue was mentioning in his questions, is that for the economic development, we are looking at assurances that we're getting more benefit out of this than just the return on the interest rate. And when you read through that, a significant expansion of permanent jobs, expands the assessed valuation of the properties within the county, and an increase in sales of property tax, and then we go into some of the others, the stable diversity of economy, which we've covered. With this particular bill, what we're saying is the party coming in wanting these funds will have to engage a third-party consultant to make those findings. We won't be relying on any internal type of report, which I think is just another good component of the due diligence of this, the independence of it. I think the next question, I might have skipped around here. You were asking about the first place position. And I too agree that this language is not quite as clean as what I'd like, but I think it's important that we do have a first place security interest. And if we're in there with a 25% position and another party comes in or they use a loan in a second place position for their $3 that they would match on the one, then there's a strong incentive there if something happens that we, the state of Wyoming, gets taken out first in order for that second party to preserve their equity position. So being in that first place position is a strong protection for the state of Wyoming. The purpose of the language here, again, and I agree it's a bit awkward, where it says first security interest on the entire project funded or in part, what they're saying is if it was phased in, there may be a case that we would be adequately secured by one building or one component of a multi-phase project. That's what they were looking at. I think I might have already addressed the third question just a little bit, but it is contemplated for every dollar we put in that the business seeking the use of this program will put in three. And they can do that with a loan. It does not have to be a pure equity match. They could do that with a private loan, not other state funds, which I think was very key and something that I questioned in committee, was that we understand that $3 has to be private dollars, either from a bank or if someone does have that amount of equity.
Representative Larson? Mm-hmm. Representative Cohn?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's important to note that in current statute now, the purpose of the business council is defined in 912.105 states. It shall be the duty of the council to encourage, stimulate, and support the development and expansion of the economy within the state. I believe that Senate File 97 is an appropriate next step in the process. It's an appropriate next step to diversify our economy. And I believe it's got all of the protections that are necessary and prudent to protect the state's interest, as well as continuing to expand what we want our business council to do. So I would encourage an aye vote. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to point out that economic development is for all. Economic development will develop more taxes within the state. It will develop more jobs. And that's what this bill is about. It's taking a large project and making a vehicle so that we can get more jobs in the state. We can get more taxes from it. And I wanted to, one other little thing I wanted to bring up was that the three times private funds, cash is king. If I'm holding a loan for $70 million and I've got $35 million in cash, I might like to have that cash on hand to be able to do what I need to do with it and use it accordingly on maybe the 71 or wherever I want to put it. We've had a lot of businesses started in Wyoming with grants, and we're starting to see some of the reactions that are happening out of that. We're starting to see these data centers blow up and blossom throughout the state. There's another one planned in the middle of the state. And perhaps this, too, will take off, and we'll see more development from economic development like this. I would appreciate your positive and affirmative vote on this House Bill 70 or 97. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 97 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 97 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 28. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 28 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure, allowing a motion for new trial for persons convicted of a felony upon a showing of actual innocence based on non-DNA evidence, specifying requirements and conditions, providing for compensation, specifying retention of governmental immunity, conforming provisions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 28 engrossed, post-conviction actual innocence, reports back to the House that it do pass with following amendments. There were 8 aye votes, 1 no vote, signed by Representative Gingrich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrich? And there is a standing committee amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 28 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll dispense with that real quickly. There was a shell that needed to be a may. Unless there's any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, I call the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn over the explanation of the bill to the representative from Laramie.
Madam Minority Caucus Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 28 is about the process for what to do when there's actual innocence post-conviction. This was an interim topic, and this will be the first of 2 bills. You'll see Senate File 30 next when that evidence is DNA evidence as well as compensation. But this is the bill that looks at post-conviction with actual innocence when there's not DNA evidence. So what this bill does is it gives individuals who are actually innocent but wrongfully convicted a method for a path to prove that they're innocent of any wrongdoing. It's not a broad allowance for an application of exoneration. Rather, it allows for the presentation of a narrow class of evidence. It doesn't include recantation or changes in testimony by witnesses. It allows that if the state and the individual don't agree on the evidence of innocence, that the court may or may not order a new trial. This decision is solely within the court's discretion. If the court doesn't grant a new trial, the decision is final and there's no right to appeal. So despite the best efforts of many just and honest prosecutors, the justice system still contains flaws at times that needs to be addressed by bills such as this one's. And once the criminal justice process has run its course, there are few options for those who are truly innocent. And so what this bill does is it sets up that what that process is. And so because this is such a big issue, and honestly one that we spent the entire interim looking at through all 3 of our meetings, and again, you'll have 2 bills, that I thought I'd walk you through. On page 2, there are important definitions of what actually innocent means. First, it means that the individual did not engage in the conduct for which the movement was convicted. Second, didn't engage in conduct in connection with the offense for which the person was convicted, which would constitute a lesser included offense or another felony. And 3, didn't engage in any conduct which would constitute aiding and abetting. So what you see right here is actually innocent really means actually innocent, that the individual convicted in no way, shape, or form had anything to do with the crime with which he or she was convicted. On page 3, it establishes that the motion for a new trial has to be based on newly discovered evidence. It's not some reinterpretation of existing evidence. It's newly discovered evidence. That motion has to include 4 points. The first is that new evidence must be clear and convincing, which is not just a little bit, but about a 75% chance that that evidence will prove actual innocence. Second, it has to be supported by an affidavit based on personal knowledge of the affiant or similar credible evidence showing that the movement is actually innocent, the I never did it statement. Third, on page 4, that there's an absence of available state corrective process, which in all honesty is why we have this bill. And fourth, be supported by evidence other than recantations of testimony or statements or impeachment evidence. So this is simply not a witness coming. This is not someone changing their testimony that they gave at trial. Right? That's not acceptable. The motion shall also state, and again on page 4, whether the movement had previously moved for a new trial, because that's not acceptable. Second, that neither the movement nor his counsel knew that the evidence existed. And third, that the court found that there was ineffective counsel. Okay. On the next page, that the district attorney has 4 months to respond to the motion. In the middle of the page, what the review of the court is, that the court will determine whether or not every one of those elements has been met. Again, by the clear and convincing standard. You go on to the next page, that the court will then decide to hold a hearing. The middle of the page, upon the stipulation of the parties or a motion for dismissal of the original charges against the movement by the state in lieu of a retrial, the court, and this is where we change the shall to a may, right? The court may, upon its discretion, decide to vacate the movement's conviction consistent with the evidence, issue an order of actual innocence and exoneration, and issue an order of expungement. Or what this bill does is it sets up the path for a new trial. And so that's actually what this bill does, is it sets up a path based on clear and convincing evidence that a judge decides meets the clear and convincing standard. It allows for a new trial. And that's it. All right. It allows for a new trial. The rest of the bill goes on to say that there can be appointment of counsel, that there needs to be victim notification, that there are rights not waived, that the party may not appeal, that if there is a finding of actual innocence, that there's a method for compensation, and you'll hear about that in the next bill. And then the final three elements are about a waiver of immunity. So this is a carefully crafted, narrowly crafted bill that allows for a path for someone who is actually innocent post-conviction to get a new trial. And I'll stand for any questions.
Representative, would you like to deal with the Committee of the Whole amendment?
Mr. Chairman, that would be the Speaker.
Mr. Speaker.
I would withdraw Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1.
If there are no other questions, I'll stand for the question.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 28 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 28 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 30. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 30 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure, authorizing compensation for persons exonerated based on DNA testing, specifying conditions, requirements, and limitations on authorized compensation, retaining governmental immunity as specified, conforming provisions, providing appropriation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 30 engrossed, compensation for persons exonerated based on DNA evidence, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. There were 9 ayes, 0 noes, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 30 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I'll explain this one real quick. So a few years ago, I think it was, it would have been about 08, because the Judiciary Committee did a different interim bill that year that got passed, and we worked with a group called Project Innocence that goes around the nation getting these bills passed in many, many states. With the advent of DNA, and this bill's dealing with DNA, with the advent of DNA, there have been cases around the country where people have been proven innocent. They have been incarcerated in our prisons that should not have been there. So we created a bill back in 08, 09, somewhere in there, that created a process by which you come back to court and have your DNA evidence that's hopefully been held in some storage locker somewhere by the police and have that looked at, and then based on that evidence get a hearing back in front of the judge. And what the person is aiming to get is what we call exoneration. Exoneration is an order saying you're actually innocent. You did not commit the crime. Not that you're acquitted or that you there wasn't enough evidence to convict you, that you were actually innocent. You did not do the crime. At the time when we did that bill, we had a compensation piece in the bill. We couldn't agree on how that compensation should work, so we actually pulled that part out because at the time we said, well, we should get, at least get the process in place, and then if it ever comes up we need to do something, we'll get the compensation part put in place. Well, we're at that point that we sort of need to get the compensation part in place. So how the compensation works is if you've gone through the entire process, and you won't see that in this bill because it's already in statute, but there's a process to get an order of exoneration. So if you get that order, you get that order from a judge, an order of exoneration saying you're actually innocent of the crime, and that you have to also show that you weren't serving a concurrent or a consecutive sentence for some other separate conviction, and you weren't aiding and abetting or that type of stuff. But if you show all that, then we would pay you $100 a day for every day you were wrongfully imprisoned, up to a total of $500,000. Now, this took us a long time in the interim to discuss because lots of states have all chosen different ways, different amounts, and we're sort of on the low end, but that's what we went with. We went with the $100 a day with a total limit of $500,000. And how we dispense that is we dispense it if you were held and it was less than, if you add up the $100 a day and it's less than $50,000, we'll just pay you a lump sum, if whatever that sum is, under $50. If it's over $50, we're going to buy an annuity and we're going to send you $50,000 a year until we get to that amount. And that's how that works. You can apply for it for 2 years. So from the date of your actual order of exoneration, you have 2 years to apply to receive the money from us, from the state. What we did, and you'll see this in the standing committee amendment, there is a gentleman now here in this county that has one of those actual orders of exoneration. They wanted us to put in, and that's what you'll see in the lines 5 through 8 in the standing committee amendment, they wanted to put in that two-year time limit. They put in, regardless of whether the order of actual innocence and exoneration was entered before or after the effective date of this act. They wanted to make clear that this could apply to that gentleman too. And then you move on. There's a lot. It was sort of interesting. We had a gentleman testify in committee, and he's an expert. Normally we see him in our committee talking on wills and probate and things like that, but he came on this bill and he actually straightened out quite a few of the smaller things dealing with estates and how you do decrees and deal with distributees. And that's what you see in the rest of the standing committee amendment, is some items dealing with estates. And then if you move on, it just shows you how they receive their money. They're waiving the governmental immunities in there. And then lastly, the Senate had put in $300,000 for an appropriation. We actually took out the appropriation. We'd like to, the conversation was that we needed to talk a little bit more about the Senate, why they had done that. And so right now the bill, as the standing committee amendment is, it does not have an appropriation. We think what they were thinking is because of that, we're trying to do this bill independent of what's going on here in this county. So we didn't think there needed to be an appropriation yet. The Senate seemed to think there needed to be an appropriation, so they put in $300,000, and you'll see that on the standing committee amendment on it's the line 35, or we deleted the appropriation. If someone wants to put the appropriation back in, we can certainly have that discussion. I'll stand for any questions.
You heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The standing committee amendment number one to Senate 530 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 30 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 30 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration, Senate File 96. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 96 from Senator Scott, an act relating to labor and employment, amending the definition of independent contractor for purposes of unemployment compensation and workers' compensation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whose referred Senate File 96, engrossed, Workforce Services, Independent Contractors, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. There were 6 ayes and 3 noes, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with recommendation that Senate File 96 do pass. And I turn the explanation over to the bill to the Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I will move the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 first, and we can discuss that and then the bill as a whole. And Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 simply it tries to correct a little bit of ambiguity in the bill. There is currently a method in the statute to determine whether someone is an independent contractor or not. This bill sets up an alternative method, but it's not clear, I think, as it's written now, what elements fit with what. So what the Committee of the Whole Amendment does is it says you can qualify either under sections 1 through 6, which are already in the statute, or under these alternative sections 7 and 8. And so it's more technical correction than anything, but it clarifies the meaning of the bill. So if we can get that passed, I'll talk about the bill as a whole.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 96. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye. Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, just a little bit of the background behind this bill. There, over the last decade or so especially, in energy companies in the state, they may, have terminated employees that they had that may be drillers or other sorts of things, and have instead really on most of their wells started to contract with folks that acted as independent consultants. And, you have company men, you have directional drillers, you have all sorts of these positions that may have at one time been in-house services for these companies, but now they hire consultants. There was a sort of a peculiar legal decision that came out in 2010 addressing these types of independent contractors, and there was a claim essentially for unpaid unemployment on a number of these types of consultants. And the decision that came out drew a distinction that exists nowhere else in the country, not in any other state, not in the federal government, nowhere else, between an independent consultant who's acting, maybe they formed their own LLC, and so it may be Mr. X LLC, as opposed to the individual, just Mr. X. And for some reason, the court drew a distinction between those two, even though they were acting exactly the same. And really, the bill is drafted to address that situation and to make clear that even if – here's the other, I guess, element of it. As a driller, folks were getting maybe the specifications of the well, or maybe if they're in charge of fracking. They were given directions about how many stages of fracking, where they wanted it to be done. And there was an issue about, is that control of this person? Is that not control of this person? This bill is intended to clarify that fact and clarify that those are, in fact, independent contractors, so that there's not confusion either on the companies that are employing them or on the part of the consultants themselves. And this says, you know, if they're free from control or direction asserted directly by the person or entity contracting for the services over all the details of performance. So you can give some direction, but as long as you don't control all the details of performance and the person has some substantial investment, this is sort of, they have tools of the trade that they own, then they're going to be an independent contractor. So it's intended to clarify some confusion that has existed out there since that court decision. And I'll take questions, but I'd urge your vote.
Representative Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can try to explain, we passed this bill out of committee based on a very good faith effort that I would be able to come up with language that might be able to start correcting some of the issues that we were having, because we couldn't quite wrap our heads around the bill. So the restructuring amendment that the good speaker before me had just explained to all of you was a step in the right direction, but just to give you guys an idea of kind of how many problems we have going into this bill, that took 2 days and four attorneys to come up with language that was just going to make sense on the introduction of this bill. The bill currently is going to cause problems within our own existing statute. So we've got this definition and we're updating that definition, and I actually like some of the language that's in the bill. That's why I said perhaps if I worked on it, we could get ourselves to a place that we could pass this bill. But the problem that we're going to have is in existing statutes with definition in other places. So you're going to, in the new definition that's proposed in this language, you're going to meet independent contractor. And then in other definitions, you're going to meet the definition of something else. So the exact same standards, different labels within current statutes. So the Department of Workforce Services has a few issues with this. Not to mention there are 21 additional tax issues that sort of need to be melded into this bill in order for everything to be cohesive. And then we also have to take a look at the conflicts that this might create with the Fair Labor Standards Board. So there's a lot of different problems. I've got the first of, I think there are five proposed amendments. I have one three-page amendment that's drafted. If we wanted to move this bill forward, you're going to see several pages of amendments on second and third reading just to get this bill to a place where it's going to make sense, it's not going to conflict with existing statutes, and it's going to be agreeable. It's going to, I guess, work well with other issues, tax issues in the Fair Labor Standard Board. So we can make quick work of this bill and say, let's take a look at it closer during the break, and maybe, you know, good bills come back, and we can take a look at it then. But the jumping off point right now is a ton of work, and unfortunately probably my work, in order to come back with several pages worth of amendments for all of you to consider just to get this to a working place. And I will tell you that in order for us to even get started on several pages of amendments, the first thing we have to do is delete a certain amendment from the very sponsor of the bill. So I think that defeats his purpose. So vote however you want to on the bill. I'm just telling you it's 2 days before we could possibly adjourn and getting late on general file, and we could either make quick work and just bring this bill back later, or you guys can all sit through 18 pages of amendments on second and third reading.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I first of all, probably don't have a lot to add to the previous speaker, who I think raised most of the concerns. When you go into the employment statutes and you create, as I understand it, and maybe this is a question for the proponent of the bill, a new definition for independent contractor that permeates far beyond the oil and gas sector to everything from your housekeeper to your, well, maybe not your babysitter, but, you know, your
contract cleaning service at your office, your roofer, your everything. And it does affect the entire statutory scheme, because when you change the definition of independent contractor or employee and put a new definition in there that varies from what the federal law has, that varies from existing definitions, when we do it this way, we tend to create a mess. And I think that's basically what the previous speaker was saying. And so I would just ditto what she has said and urge us to resist this bill. If it's something that truly needs clarification, we need to do it in a much more thoughtful and deliberative way that we can all understand, to make sure that it doesn't have the dreaded unintended consequences of, frankly, disrupting multiple business operations. Thank you.
Representative Pipirinen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to piggyback on two previous speakers and ask how this goes with the Department of Labor, and does this definition change work for federal guidelines?
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need some guidance from the presenter of the bill on why we need two standards within the definition of employment in our statute. What we have before us, and you only see part of it, is on page 2, line 1, we have a standard there, and then on page 6, there's a new standard that is going to take place below that. The existing standard is three established tests that have been in place for a long time. Move below the line to the new test, that brings one of the existing tests and then adds something completely new. So who gets to make the determination of which test we use for defining what employment is? Is that up to the discretion of the employer, up to the discretion of the Department of Workforce Service? Who gets to make that choice? So, folks, I mean, this may need to be something that needs to be addressed. The way it's been represented, it's a very small portion of a group of employment sector that may want this addressed, but it has implications throughout our employment, from the very fact that these are definitions and tests for employment and independent contractor. I would urge very significant caution on this. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can think of a dozen instances throughout the course of any year where this would impact me personally and my neighbors. Just off the top of my head, I hire a fellow to come up and cut down some trees and split some logs. I know I have to 1099 him if I pay him over $600, but is he going to qualify? I tell him what trees to cut. I might even provide the chainsaw. And is he going to be an employee under those circumstances? I am on and against this bill.
Is there further discussion? Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those are all good questions. Let me answer the one that I can't answer. The question was who decides which of these standards applies? Well, it's an either or. You can comply with either one of those tests, and if you comply with either one, then they're not going to be an employee. And I think the good representative from Sheridan County made great comments, because this is a bill that does need some work. What I would say, though, is, you know, we're not going to have much to do over the next couple of days. It might be a good thing to spend a little time on this gem and make it into a piece of legislation we can be proud of. So, you know, I just urge you to vote aye, keep it moving through the process. I think if we can't get it resolved over the next reading or so, we'll get it to an interim that can look at it and can solve it. But I think we're here. And we've got the issues in front of us, so we might as well tackle them.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 96 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Having failed the standing division, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
No.
Flake.
No.
Blevins.
No.
Blevins.
No.
Blickrey.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Coleman.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Davison. Eklund,
no.
Esquibel,
no.
Filer,
no.
Freeman,
no.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
Fine.
Green,
no.
Halverson,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
no.
Hutchings,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparik,
Fine.
Kirkbride,
no.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
no.
Larson,
no.
Larson, Lockhart,
no.
Laux,
no.
Madden,
no.
Mater,
no.
McKim,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Northrup,
no.
Patton,
no.
Paxton,
no.
Petroff, Pieperinen,
no.
Reeder,
no.
Simlick,
no.
Summers,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
no.
Walters,
no.
Watt,
no.
Wilson, Winters,
no.
Swanitzer Dan,
no.
Swanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 6-aye, 54 no.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, Senate File 96, having failed the roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave the report as follows. Senate File 91, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 11, amended, and further amended. And further amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 113. Amended. The presiding officer declared that a majority of the elected members of the House had failed to vote on the affirmative. The bill was indefinitely postponed.
There we go.
Senate File 39, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 97, amended. Representative Coleman announced a conflict of interest on Senate File 97, recommended do pass. Senate File 28, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 30, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 96, amended. The bill was indefinitely postponed.
Representative Kirkbride.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Congratulations, Representative Kirkbride. The Committee of the Whole report's adopted. We've got about another 30 minutes worth of business. If we cruise through this as quickly as we can, we'll try and make it shorter than that. We're at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 1, General Government Appropriations. The Senate adopted a joint conference committee number 01. Report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. It was ayes 20, noes 10, signed by Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 257, concurrence, failed. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 64, the Public Health Nursing, failed to concur on House amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated, noes 29, ayes 1. The Senate requests the House appoint a conference committee 01 to meet with a like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 258, Mr. Speaker, Senate File number 3, School Facilities Collaborative Committee Process. The Senate failed to concur on House amendment to the bill listed above. There were 30 noes, 0 ayes. The Senate requests the House appoint a conference committee to 01 to meet with the like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 259, concurrence passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below. Senate File 58, National Guard Service, Governor's Authority, ayes 24, noes 6, signed by Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 260, concurrence failed. Mr. Speaker, Senate File number 79, Education Student Data Security-2, the Senate failed to concur on the House amendments to the bill listed above, noes 30, ayes 0. The Senate requests the House appointed conference committee number 01, to meet with a like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 261, concurrence passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendment to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 74, Unemployment Insurance Coverage Fiduciaries, ayes 30, noes 0. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 262, concurrence passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below. Senate File 57, Reduction of Boards and Commissions, ayes 29, noes 1. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 263, conferees appointed. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee number 01 from the House on amendments to Senate File 64. The Senate conferees are Senator Peterson, Chairman, Senator Anderson and Senator Netting, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 264, Joint Conference Committee Report adopted. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 103, State Buildings-Construction. The Senate adopted Joint Conference Committee 01, reporting the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 27, noes 3. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 265, conferees appointed. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed the Senate conferees to meet with the like committee number 01 from the House on Amendments to Senate File 3. Those are Senator Landon, Chairman, Senator Nicholas, and Senator Bernard. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 266, conferees appointed. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the like committee number 01 from the House on Amendments 2, Senate File 79. The Senate conferees are Senator Coe, Chairman, Senator Landon, Senator Rothfuss, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Conference Committee on Senate File 64 will be Representative Kasparek, Chairman, Gingrey, and Burkhart. The Conference Committee on Senate File 79 will be Representative Summers, Chair, Paxton, and Byrd. The Conference Committee on Senate File 3 will be Representative Wilson, Chair, Greer, and Winters. With that order of business of consideration of joint conference committee reports, the first conference committee report for our consideration is committee report number one on Senate file 103. Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move joint conference committee report number one for Senate file 103 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, you'll remember Senate file 103 dealing with the state capital construction project. We added a number of amendments on one in second reading and two in third. The conference committee essentially accepted all of our amendments except for one. We had an amendment on there that really set out the allocation for the four statewide electeds, essentially suggested heavily, if not mandated, that each of the four end up in the Capitol when all was said and done. There were some technical concerns with where that amendment was placed, and then just as a policy matter, the Senate had real concerns over that. And so we receded from that position, but we ended up accepting all the other amendments, including the amendment that we added on that took out the priority list of the elected officials that was in the bill. So as you remember, we took out that priority and said, no, we're not going to list them as they are in the bill. And after a lot of discussion, the Senate agreed to that position. So it's a good balance, I think, and a good bill. So I'd ask for your aye vote.
Any discussion? We're voting on Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to Senate File 103. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins. Blevins.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Escobel,
Filer,
Freeman,
Gay,
Gingery,
Goggles,
Greer,
Green,
Halverson,
Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Hutchings, Yagi, Kasparic, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson, Lockhart, Laux, Madden, Mader, McKim, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Petroff, Piperinen, Reeder, Simlick, Summers, Stubson, Teeters, Throne, Walters, Watt, Wilson, Winters, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Gay, aye to no. Yagi, aye to no. Davison, aye to no. Nicholas, no. Hutchings, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. McKim, aye to no. Watt, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 50 aye, 10 no.
By your vote, you have voted to adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to Senate File 103. We're now at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts. The first enrolled act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 24, being original House Bill 13. Is that the wrong page?
Here, come on. How about, I don't know if it's the
The first one is House Enrolled Act Number 23, being Original House Bill Number 5.
Enrolled Act Number 23 from Original House Bill Number 5, an act relating to school buses.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 23 being original House Bill 5. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for consideration is House Enrolled Act 24 being original House Bill 13.
Enrolled Act number 24 from original House Bill 13, an act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 24 being original House Bill 13. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 25 being original House Bill 18.
Enrolled Act number 25 from original House Bill 18, an act relating to coroners.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 25 being original House Bill 18. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 26 being original House Bill 19.
Enrolled Act number 26 from original House Bill 19, an act relating to notaries.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 26 being original House Bill 19. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 27 being original House Bill 36.
Enrolled Act number 27 from original House Bill 36, an act relating to the legislature.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 27 being original House Bill 36. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 28 being original House Bill 53.
Enrolled Act number 28 from original House Bill 53, an act relating to the Wyoming Lottery Corporation.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 28 being original House Bill 53. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act number 29 being original House Bill 69.
Enrolled Act number 29 from original House Bill 69, an act relating to fuel tax.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 29 being original House Bill 69. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 30, being original House Bill 86.
Enrolled Act number 30 from original House Bill 86, an act relating to special rural health care districts.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 30 being original House Bill 86. I have so signed. Congratulations, Representative Summers. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 31 being original House Bill 123.
Enrolled Act number 31 from original House Bill 123, an act relating to administrative procedure.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 31 being original House Bill 123. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 32 being original House Bill 145.
Enrolled Act number 32 from original House Bill 145, an act relating to use tax.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 32 being original House Bill 145. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 33 being original House Bill 175.
Enrolled Act number 33 from original House Bill 175, an act relating to non-testamentary transfer on death of real property.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 33 being original House Bill 175. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 34 being original House Bill 43.
Enrolled Act number 34 from original House Bill 43, an act relating to children in need of supervision.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 34 being original House Bill 43. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 35 being original House Bill 14.
Enrolled Act number 35 from original House Bill 14, an act relating to business entities.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 14 being original House Bill 35. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 36 being original House Bill 38.
Enrolled Act number 36 from original House Bill 38, an act relating to taxidermists.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 36 being original House Bill 38.
I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 38, being original House Bill 95.
I think so. Look for 3747.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 37, being original House Bill 47.
Enrolled Act number 37 from original House Bill 47, an act relating to government royalty revenues.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 37, being original House Bill 47. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 38, being original House Bill 95.
Enrolled Act number 38 from original House Bill number 95, an act relating to public health.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 38, being original House Bill 95. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 39, being original House Bill 22.
Enrolled Act number 39 from original House Bill number 22, an act relating to revenue and taxation.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 39, being original House Bill 22. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act number 40, being original House Bill 62.
Enrolled Act number 40 from original House Bill 62, an act relating to professions and occupations.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 40, being original House Bill 62. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act 41, being original House Bill 1, the budget bill.
Enrolled Act number 41 from original House Bill 1, an act to make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1st, 2014 and ending June 30th, 2016.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 41, being original House Bill 1. Congratulations, the Appropriations Committee, and all of you. You worked hard. I have so signed. With that order of business, the committee announcements. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you. I'm not sure I call this a committee announcement or a privilege of the floor, but I just handed out, Mr. Chairman, some information on the PowerPoint that we typically do at the end of the session. And as most of you know, we have our interns help us with this, and it's a nonpartisan PowerPoint that we develop. We work as fast as we can with their assistance to get something done for you before you leave. I would like for you, you should have your handout. If you have things you would like to add to it, if you would please send that by tomorrow morning to our intern coordinator. And then, ladies and gentlemen, any of you as chairman, if you have specific things that you would like added to the PowerPoint, if you could please also send that to the intern coordinator or get with me, and I will help you with that. And then we will, just to go through this, because many of you have asked about this, then once we have the budget finalized, our budget division for the legislature will review the numbers, and then we will update the PowerPoint with that information, and I will send you an email later with that PowerPoint attached. If you have any other concerns or questions in regards to this, there will be other handouts that you'll get at the end of the week when we're dispersing. Please come and talk to me about it. Thank you.
Chairman Sumlet.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet with a like committee from the Senate tomorrow morning, Tuesday, March 4th at 8 a.m. in room H11 to have a joint discussion of interim topics.
Chairman Zwanitz, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow morning with a like committee at 8:45, right after the Ag committee meets. But at 8:45 and H17 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet in room H17 to discuss interim topics as soon as the Senate has adjourned.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Speaker, the Joint Conference Committee Number 1, Senate File 41, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee will meet tomorrow, March 4, 2014, 15 minutes upon noon recess in the Senate Minerals meeting room. And because the Chair of Minerals, Senate Minerals, did not know which room that was, he said he just goes there. I didn't have the number either, but that's where we'll be.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move we adjourn until tomorrow, March 4, 2014, at 10 o'clock a.m.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative House is in recess.